ചക്ഷുർമീലിതം യേന തസ്മൈ ശ്രീഗുരവേ നമഃ. ശ്രീചൈതന്യമനോഭീഷ്ടം സ്ഥാപിതം യേന ഭൂതലേ സ്വയം രൂപകഥാ മഹ്യം ദദാതി സ്വപദാന്തികം. വന്ദേഹം ശ്രീഗുരു ശ്രീയുതാപദകമലം ശ്രീഗുരും വൈഷ്ണവാംശ്ച ശ്രീരൂപം സാഗ്രജാതം സഹഗണ രഘുനാഥാന്വിതം തം സജീവം സാദ്വൈതം സാവധൂതം പരിജനാസഹിതം കൃഷ്ണചൈതന്യദേവം ശ്രീരാധാകൃഷ്ണപദാം സഹഗണലളിതം ശ്രീവിശാഖാന്വിതംശ്ച. നമോ വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിനിതി നാമിനി സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണി. നമോ ഓം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതീ നാമിനി ശ്രീവർഷഭാനവിദേവി ദൈതായ കൃപാബ്ദയേ ബന്ധവിജ്ഞാനം ദായിനേ പ്രഭവേ നമ. മാധുര്യോജ്വല പ്രയവാദ്യ ശ്രീരൂപാനുഗഭക്തിത ശ്രീഗൗരകരുണാശക്തി വിഗ്രഹായ നമോസ്തുതേ. നമസ്തേ ഗൗരവാണി ശ്രീമൂർത്തയേ ദീനധാരിണേ രൂപാനുഗ വിരുദ്ധാപ സിദ്ധാന്തദ്വന്ദ്വഹാരിണേ. നമോ ഗൗരകിശോരായ സാക്ഷാത് വൈരാഗ്യമൂർത്തയേ വിപ്രലംബന സർവോമി അവതാംബുജായേ നമഃ. നമോ ഭക്തിവിനോദായ സച്ചിദാനന്ദനാമിനേ ഗൗരശക്തി രൂപനോദവരായ ഗൗരാവിർഭവഭൂമിസ്ഥം നിർദ്ദേഷ്ടാ സജ്ജനപ്രിയ വൈഷ്ണവാസർവഹോമ ശ്രീ ജഗന്നാഥായ ദേ നമ. പഞ്ചകൽപ്പതിരുഭ്യശ്ച കൃപാ സിന്ധുഭ്യ ഏവ ച പ്രതിദാനം ഭാവനേഭ്യോ വൈഷ്ണവേഭ്യോ നമോ നമ. നമോ മഹാവദന്യായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രേമ പ്രദായതേ കൃഷ്ണായ കൃഷ്ണചൈതന്യ നാമ്നേ ഗൗര ശ്രീ നമ. പഞ്ചതത്വാത്മകം കൃഷ്ണം ഭക്തരൂപസ്വരൂപകം ഭക്താവതാരം ഭക്താഖ്യം നമാമി ഭക്തശാത്വികം. ഹേ കൃഷ്ണ കരുണാ സിന്ധോ ദീനബന്ധോ ജഗൽപദേ ഗോപീശ ഗോപികാകാന്ത രാധാകാന്ത നമോസ്തുതേ. ജയതം സുരതോപാംഗോർ മമ മന്ദമദീർഘതി മത്സർവസ്വദാംബോജോ രാധാമദന മോഹനോ ദിവ്യവൃന്ദാരണ്യകൽപദ്രുമാദോ ശ്രീമന്ത്രത്നാകര സിംഹാസനസ്ഥോ ശ്രീരാധാശീല ഗോവിന്ദദേവോ പ്രേഷ്ടാളിഭി സേവ്യമാനോ സ്മരാമി. ശ്രീമന്ദ്രാസരസാരംഭി വംശീവടതടസ്ഥിത കൃഷ്ണൻ വേണുസ്വനീർഗോപേർ ഗോപിനാഥാശ്രയേസ്തുന തപ്തകാഞ്ചനഗൗരാംഗീ രാധേ വൃന്ദാവനേശ്വരി വൃഷഭാനുസ്വദേ ദേവി പ്രണമാമി ഹരിപ്രിയേ. ജയ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദ. ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ, ഹരേ രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ, ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ, ഹരേ രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ, ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ, ഹരേ രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ. ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണി ഭഗവതി അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനീ മമ്പ ത്വാമനുസന്ദതാമി ഭഗവത്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണി. നമോസ്തുതേ വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധേ പുല്ലാരവിന്ദായുധപത്രനേത്ര യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപ പ്രപന്നപാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേത്രൈകവാണയേ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമഃ. സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സ സുധീർഭോക്താ ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത് വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസച്ചാണൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും. ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാ ജയദ്രതജലാ ഗാന്ധാര നീലോൽപല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ വഹനി കർണേന വേലാകുല അശ്വത്ഥാമാ വികർണ ഘോരമകരാ ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സോതീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണനദി കൈവർത്തക കേശവ പാരാശര്യവജസ്സരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനകകേസരം ഹരികഥ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജനശൽപതൈരഹരഹ പേബീയമാനം മുദാ ഭൂയാത് ഭാരതഭംഗജക്കലിമല പ്രദ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ. മുഖം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃവാദമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മാവരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുദസ്തുന്യോന്തിരിവ്യൈസ്തവൈർവേദൈ സാംഗപദൈ ക്രമോപനിഷദൈർ ഗായന്തി യം സമഗാഹം ജ്ഞാനാവസ്ഥിതതദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. So, last time when we stopped about the importance of the Vedam, when we were discussing, we said Vedam is apaurushayam. Apaurushayatva means that it is on the strength of the Vedam that we prove the existence of God, not the other way. Normally we say God spoke and we accept it as the scriptures, like Bible or any other scripture for that matter. God has spoken. But in the Vedic system, it's the Vedam that says God exists. And existence of God is proven by the Vedam. So that means the authority of the Vedam, to show how authorized Vedam is. That without Vedam there is no question of talking about God. God's existence is proven by the authority of the Vedam. So that is why in the Vedam also that the till self-realization all this is necessary. Till you realize the truth, all this is necessary. After realization, it's not required anymore. Because you have realized the truth. You don't need to know anymore. That's the way it is, the relationship. So, just like in the Vedic tradition itself, if you look carefully, you will see this, that logic, what is logic's position? Where does logic ends? Till you have bhakti, once you start experiencing bhakti in the heart, till then you need the logic. Once you are experiencing something yourself, then you don't need logic after that, isn't it? It's understandable. Logic is only up to the point till you know about it. Once you have experienced something, then you don't need logic after that. So here, all that what we have spoken till now is for those who are in the platform of logic. That means everything what we discussed about Vedam so far is for those who wants everything to be presented in a logical way. Right? And those who have experienced bhakti, then you don't need to tell them logically anything. They are already experiencing it, so what is the need, right? So, Vedam, it's apaurushayatvam. Apaurushayatvam means that this situation of the, it is not something manufactured by a human being. It has come apaurushayam. It is beyond the purusha, right? So, now what we have to discuss, that's what we have spoke about Vedam. Shruti, in other words. You see, Shruti Gita in the Bhagavadam also. So, now we have to talk about Vedangam, the different limbs of the body. Vedam is like a person, and his different limbs of this body is called Vedangam, different limbs of the body, right? They are Shiksha, Kalpam, Vyagaranam, Chandasa, Niruttam, Jyotisham, the six different, what are they, and what's their relationship with the Vedam? So that's what is spoken, right? So, these topics, you can listen to this and understand that with the mind, what it is, and with your intelligence. But unlike bhakti, it cannot be discussed on an experience level. Bhakti is for experience. But these six topics is not for experience. This has to be understood what they are. So, it's important to know about this rather than experiencing it, right? So, in this world also, there are certain things which you have to experience, right? And there are certain things which you have to know. They both exist in this world. Some things you have to experience in this world. Some things you have to know in this world, right? And you can't give up any of them, either of them, right? So, what you have to know, through your mind and intelligence, you have to know that. And what you have to experience, you have to experience only. There is no other way. For example, right? Bhakti is something, there is no point in talking about bhakti a lot. Because bhakti is meant for experiencing inside the heart what bhakti is, right? For example, you say you've gone to Vrindavanam and we studied about Vrindavanam, the road map, the different streets, the different temples, Govardhanam, holy rivers, Radhakund, Shyamakund, all the locations, everything you knew. And then you have come back, you have gone and visited all these places and came back, right? And then you are saying that I didn't feel any difference by going to Vrindavanam. I saw another set of places and roads and streets and mountains and rivers and things like that, right? So what does that say? What that means is that when you went there, what was your state of consciousness? That's what matters. When you went there, right? And how did you see all these places? For example, Govardhanam, or Radhakunda, Shyamakunda, or any other holy places there, right? And that cannot be explained through words. If you have the bhakti in the heart, you will see all these places in a different way. If we have no bhakti in the heart, when you go there, you will see like any other place. It won't be much different. So, to understand Vrindavanam, you have to experience Vrindavanam. Otherwise, you won't understand. You won't find any difference between Vrindavanam and elsewhere. It will be the same thing. So, Vrindavanam is to be understood in the level of bhakti only. Bhakti, level of bhakti. Bhakti dalam. So, and things what has to be understood through logic, yukti, that's where intelligence operates, buddhi. Buddhi comes in. Right. For example, there are many, many topics what we have to talk about, and some of them you have to approach them through scriptures, through shastram. And some of them are information which you have to know and you have to keep it in your memory or intelligence, you have to store it. Some of the things what we discuss are meant for that. And some of them are to be experienced and understood that way. So there are two different things. Certain things you have to know through your mind and intelligence and you have to store it as knowledge, and some of the things you have to experience it yourself and then accept it. That's bhakti. We're talking about bhakti. So everything has its own methods of following, right? So what we can do is to know these things, which one belongs to which group. Some of them you can only understand through mind and intelligence. You have to understand things. And some of them you can only understand through experiencing in life, right? So, so apaurushayatvam of the Vedam we have discussed before, right? And this Vedam in this way, what is spoken about, right, is the first one among them, the Vedangam, or the limbs of the body, is the Shiksha. First one is Shiksha. Shiksha is called, it's called Shiksha. Shiksha means the way of speaking. The Shastram related to the way you speak about it, right? Our great rishis, they have touched all aspects of spiritual life. All aspects of spiritual life, right? And unlike modern way, the modern science, right? Their advancement is in developing new technology for making the life here more comfortable. Bhoga samagri. That means to increase the material facilities. And they call that as advancement. Right? Apart from that, there is not much the modern science has offered, is it? Everything what the modern science has given us is only to increase our material comforts. Beyond that, their understanding of life is very little. It stays like that. It hasn't changed at all for hundreds of years. It's the same, right? So, whereas in the Vedam, what they are saying is dharmam, brahmam, two things, right? And whatever that is to be spoken about dharmam and brahmam, it's been spoken in length and in detail in the Vedam. Other topics, Vedam has not given much importance. Dharmam and brahmam, right? So, when Vedam starts talking about these two topics, right? In order to explain that, there are certain things which stands as a support for that. Vedam talks about dharmam and brahmam. But while discussing dharmam and brahmam, in order to support that, what Vedam says, there are certain things which supports this. And that is the Vedangam, the limbs of Vedapurusha. Right? So, all the Vedangam, and similarly, all other Vidyasthanam, which is these 14 things. Similarly, all the Darshanam. Darshanam means Yoga Darshanam. Patanjali's Yoga Darshanam. Kapila Maharshi's Sankhyam. Kanadas, Gaudamas. All these different rishis, different groups they have created. Right? So, similarly, all the Puranas, all the Itihasams, all of them is taking that role. Vedam is the main where discussion about dharmam and brahmam is done. But in order to support that, a supplementary role is played by all this. Which one? Puranam, Itihasam, Darshanam, and then the Vidyasthanam, Vedangam. All of them. That's their role. That's their role. But main discussion is in the Vedam. In the Vedam. So, and all these different rishis who gave us this different darshanam, like Kapila Maharshi, Patanjali, Gautama, Kanada, Vedavyas, Jaimini, all of them, they are all speaking, keeping this Vedam behind as the support for that. You see? Vedam is the support of everything. And it is because Vedam is supporting all other literature, including Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, everything stays. If Vedam is not behind it, all these other literature doesn't have that same authority. You see? So, when you keep Vedam out of the whole thing, and you start presenting Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, anything like that, it lacks that authenticity behind it. The authentic side of that is the Vedam, Shruti. So therefore, Shiksha means that how to pronounce a sound, how to properly pronounce things, Shastram, Ucharanam. And that is one part. Then Kalpam. We'll just see what these different six things are. Kalpam means that the Vedam talks about karmam, all kinds of karmam. Yajnam, yagam, homam, things like that. That how to perform them, and that for based on the varnashrama dharma. Because every varnam ashramam has different karmam to do, right? So the karmam for different varnam and different ashramam of what is spoken in the Vedam, their systematic explanation is called kalpam. You understand what kalpam means? You see, in Vedam, all the Vedam talks about loads of sacrifices, lots and lots of sacrifices. Krishna says all this touches and goes in Bhagavad Gita like that. He just touches and goes. Because there is not such a detailed description in the Bhagavad Gita, all these things. But he just mentions that. So, there he said, the importance of yagam, homam, yajnam. This is all the different terminologies for the karma. Yagam, yajnam, homam. They are all different terminologies for the karma, which is spoken in the Vedam. Now, those karmam varies based on the varnam and based on the ashrama. Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra is the varnam. Brahmachari, Grahastham, Vanaprastham, Sannyasam is the ashrama. So, different varnam, different ashramam has different karmam to be performed based on the Vedam. So, that system is discussed in Kalpam. So, you saw what Shiksha is. Shiksha is the way how you pronounce words, correctly to pronounce words, which is important because whole Vedam is dependent on the pronunciation Shiksha. That is why Shiksha is given much importance. Then comes this Kalpam. Kalpam is this Karma Anishtana Paddhati, it is called, right? And then there again, there is two branches of that called Shrauta Sutram and Dharma Sutram. Two branches based on that. So, Rishis have given explanations to that, on what basis they have separated that, and you have to study their books on this to understand the differences. Then Vyakaranam, which is, we call it as grammar in the modern way, right? So, like any other language, there is grammar for Sanskrit also, right? But it's not good enough to think that it is just like grammar for other languages. Grammar for English, grammar for German, all other languages, it does exist, right? But the system of grammar in Sanskrit is different, right? For that to understand, you have to study their Rishi's commentaries on that. And they call it as Vritti, and then Vartigam, Sutram. There are so much literature on that, right? So, combination of all these things together is called Vyakaranam. Vyakaranam is the right word. That's why to use the word grammar in place of Vyakaranam is not 100% correct. In some ways it is true, but in many other ways it is not true also. So, Vyakaranam is the right word to use. Vyakaranam is the structure of the words and the whole system. And there is Panini is the most famous of all who wrote the Vyakaranam of Sanskrit, right? Then there is thing called Niruktam. Niruktam means, you will be shocked to see how much these rishis have concerned about all these things. In today, nobody is bothered about it, isn't it? That's why our language is also like that. The English what was spoken 50 years ago is not existing anymore. English has changed. We won't even understand what the young people are talking now. So many new things they have brought it in. And imagine another 50 or 100 years from now, what the language will be. It will change. That's because these things don't exist for the other languages. So, Niruktam, what we are talking about Niruktam. That means, Vyakaranam is there to protect the word. Can you imagine? To protect the word. That means that word should not be abused by people. Nobody can abuse the words. So to protect the word, they have created this shastram called Vyakaranam. Right? Now, those words, what is being protected by the grammar, how to get the meaning out of that word, that process is called Niruktam. Niruktam. Right? Niruktam. So, you can see Vyakaranam, Niruktam are very close. Vyakaranam protects the word and Niruktam gives you the meaning of the word. If you study all the Shastram, only then you will understand how important all these things, Vedangam. Right? So, Panini was the greatest grammarian, you can call it as like that, Shastram, in charge of the Vyakaranam, right? And similarly, for Niruktam, there is a famous acharya called Yaska. Yaska. So, he is a rishi for, like Panini is a rishi for Vyakaranam, Yaska is a rishi for Niruktam, right? And he is written about Niruktam. And all these books are still available. People are still studying it also. Niruktam. He has written, right? Then there is Chandasa. Chandasa. What is Chandasa? Chandasa means Chandasa means that Chedanam. Chedanam means covering something. In what sense? Krishna used this word in the Bhagavad Gita. If you look into Bhagavad Gita. Chandamsa yasya parnani yastvam vedasa vedavit. Urdhamula matashaga ashwatham prahura vyayam. Chandamsa yasya parnani yastvam vedasa vedavit. He says. Probably we will not think what does this all mean, isn't it? Krishna has just touched and gone everything. You are supposed to understand all these things properly. So Chandasa means that this word, what you have, the sound has its meaning, right? And here, what he is saying here is that this Veda mantram, different mantram in the Vedam, it has been it has been set up in a particular order. The letters are set up in a particular order, and it is done in a purpose, done with a purpose, right? It was not started by one person, this system, right? This Chandasa, what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also, it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam also, later. In the Agarcha Skandam, Krishna will mention this word, Chandasa, right? Chandasa Shastra, it's a Shastram, right? There, what it is done is, it is the way in which each letters are structured into the words. And you will see, Krishna says in the Bhagavatam, 32, 64, number of letters, how it is formatted into the verses. In the 19th chapter, you will find mentioned. Right? So, Chandas is that shastram, which is an important shastram in relationship. What the materialistic science has given us is for all for the body, isn't it? How to improve our comforts, how to make bodily comforts better. Vedam is Vedam says about that this mantram, what has been, how mantrams were formed, all that comes in the science of Chandasa. So you see, Shiksha, Niruktam, Vyagaranam, Kalpam, Chandasa, all of them. Then there is Jyotisham, astrology, what we call it as astrology, right? So Vedic Jyotisham is not this Jyotisham what we today talk about. Today, like we, for marriage, you want to fix the Muhurtam, or things like that. That is not that Jyotisham what Vaidika Jyotisham is, right? Vaidika Jyotisham is how to find out the influence of time. Kala Ganana. In the sense that, for example, all these karmam we spoke, mentioned in the Vedam, when you are performing those karmam, is the time favorable or not? There is a way of finding out how to understand the influence of time on the kala ganana for the karma. For example, all these big sacrifices, when you perform, you have to check that with the time is favorable or not. You will see this in all the way in the various karma performed in the Vedam. It's always connected with the time. It cannot be done otherwise. That is the system. Like you can see in temple constructions also, they look into so many times at different parts of the temple is built. They have got to refer that into the shastram, whether it is the proper time. Certain months in a year it's not allowed, certain days it's not allowed. So many considerations to that. All that shastram is the Jyotisham in the Vedam. So we got mixed up. We think astrology is all about our life in this world. Marriage and having children and children's, annaprashanam and all other things. It has become like that. But that is not how in the Vedam it is. Vedam Jyotisham is for all the karmam in the Vedam to perform them, to find out is the time favorable for that. There is ways of calculations for that. So there Jyotisham is important. Jyotisham is important. Right. So karmam, all the different karmam mentioned in the Vedam, if it is not performed without consideration of the time, then the results won't be there. Like you can see when Rajasuyam was performed, they had to first find out the suitable time for that. Then similarly all the Ashwamedham was performed. Time was important. And everything, all big sacrifices, everything requires time favorable for that. So that's a system of calculation for that. That is the Jyotisham, right? So what they call it as Kala Ganana. Kala Ganana means calculation of the time, favorable time, right? So the karmam that is mentioned in the Vedam, their system of anushtanam, that means there is a system where how one should perform for example, if you take a sacrifice for that matter, sacrifice has got a different parts in that. And there is restrictions on the time, which part should be performed in which time. So many details on that. So this is where astrologers work very closely with the people who perform sacrifices. They discuss mutually these things, right? Similarly, times of eclipse is taken. Amavasi, Purnami, all these things, Tidhi, and then the star. All these things is important in Jyotisham. In Jyotisham. This is the original Jyotisham, right? Later on, Jyotisham became a science for us ordinary people to predict the future. If I go for an interview, will I get the job? Or if I get married to this girl, will my marriage will be successful? It has become like that later. But originally Jyotisham is for this, for deciding the performance of Vaidika karma, when and where, or a lot of things like that, the time particularly for that. That was the main purpose of Jyotisham, was to decide when to perform the Vaidika karma. But gradually it came into our life in this way, the way it is today. Now from that Jyotisham, all sorts of branches have come out. There is Jyotisham based on this hand, isn't it? Then there is one based on the parrot. And then there is one from the gems. And then there is all kinds of things nowadays. So, but that is not rejected. It is also Vaidigam. But at the same time, that is how it has happened, right? So, but what you have to remember is, the root of all this is in the Veda. It's coming from there, right? And, for example, you know, astrologers you go to, they will look into the planetary positions, and based on that, they will give you a results of the different position of your planets, right? And that is not subjected to logic, right? And it is not possible to understand that through our material reasoning and logic, right? There is no cause and effect there, that if it is like this, the result will be like that. You shouldn't see Jyotisham in that way, right? So, this kind of Jyotisham, this kind of astrology, where you are interpreting things about our life in this world, in Vedam they call it as Phalita Jyotisham. Phalita Jyotisham, right? Phalitam normally means joke, isn't it? But that's not what that means here, right? Phalita means this will give you the results of what is going to happen, right? Basically what it's saying is the results of your karma, karma phalam, right, will be shown by the Jyotisham, right? So, Jyotisham is basically that to tell us that if you do certain things, the results could be good or bad, and if the bad results are likely to happen from that, to give you the solution for those problems, what may come from that activity, what you have done. For example, like in our life, we do a lot of things, isn't it? We are doing so many things without considering any other. As long as it suits me, I make the money out of it, then I go along with it. This is not Vedic thinking. This is the modern way. So, Vedam is saying that if you do certain karma in this world, results will come. And results could be good or bad. If the bad results come, is there any way of escaping from that? And that Jyotisham can tell you that. So instead of using the Jyotisham for Vaidika karma, it has come to Vyavaharam now. That's what is happening now, right? So, but Vaidika Jyotisham gives importance to the Kala Ganana. How to decide the time for performing many sacrifices, Yagam or Homam or Yajnam, things like that. So, these are the six different Vedangam, right? Starting with Shiksha, Kalpam, Vyagaranam, Niruktam, Chandasa, Jyotisham. Six different branches of Vedangam. They are called the Vedangam, right? 4 plus 6 plus 4. The six are these ones. Vedangam. So, without Vedangam, it is not possible to understand Veda. It's so difficult. It's not possible, really. It's not possible, right? So, to understand Vedam, you need Vedangam, right? And similarly, all the karmam that is mentioned in the Vedam, if you want to perform them, you require this Vedangam. So you can see how closely they are connected to Vedam, right? What I'm saying is, they are not independent from the Vedam. If you want to understand Vedam, and if you want to follow the Vedam, then you need to know Vedangam, right? Now, if it is connected with bhakti, all this has no meaning. You don't need any of these things. Bhakti is a different situation altogether, completely independent from this. In the Ekadasha Skandam, Krishna will say this. That is why Krishna spoke Bhagavata Dharma, right? Bhagavata Dharma is not bound by any of these things, but it is bound by something else that we should know. Right. When you mix up these things, there is problems also. What Krishna is saying, that Bhagavata Dharma is independent. Bhagavata Dharma is independent. Right? And in the, I think it is the last chapter, somewhere at end of 28th chapter is Jnana Yogam in the 11th canto, 29th chapter. Where Krishna says to Uddhava, Uddhava said to Krishna, all this is very difficult for me. Then Krishna says to Uddhava, the only option you have is bhakti then. There is nothing else. Yeah. Tulbhavo yavadeshu spiradinavishadam tavadevam upastim kurvan aigalpme bhode jadidi vigasadi tunna yoham chareyam tadharmasyasya daval kimabina bhagavan prastudasya pranasha tasmal sarvalmaneiva Pradesha Mama Vibho Bhakti Margam Manojnyam. Melpatur combined that whole 29th chapter in one verse and put it like this. He said, it's very nicely done. He's saying that he was very thorough with the Vedic knowledge of the Vedam, all the Shastrams, everything. But he says to Krishna like this, he says, till I get to know you, about you, Tol Bhavam, that I realize that I am not different from you, in the sense that on the platform of the soul, you are me. I am not different from you. You are the one who is inside me as the soul. That is Tulbhavo. Tulbhavo yavadeshu spirati na vishadam tavadevam upastim kurvan aigalpya bhode. Till I get to that stage, that you are inside me as the Antaryami, present inside, as my very soul, that it is you who is inside me. I will continue like this way. What? I have to continue with accepting you in the form that is present in front of me. That is the deity form. In the form of the deity. And I will continue my service to you in that way. He says, Kurvan aigalpme bodhe jadati vikasati tvanmayoham chareyam. I will continue like that my life in this way. Till I come to that realization. Right? And what else? Toddharmasyasya daval. I will follow that dharmam, what you have given, which is Bhagavata dharma. Toddharmasyasya daval kimabina bhagavan prastudasya pranasha. That I will carry on to such an extent, tasmal sarvaatmaneiva pradishamama vibho bhakti margam anujyam. Velpatur says to Krishna that this, till I come to this point, I will follow this. But if you give me bhakti, I will have this realization very quickly. So to realize the self, bhakti is sufficient. But Krishna has to give it to us, bhakti. Bhakti also you can't develop it like that. Krishna has to give it to us. Tasmal sarvatmaneiva pradisha mama vibho. Melpatur said to Krishna, bhakti margam manojyam. Bhakti is a beautiful process. There is no other process. And the process you have given to us, Bhagavata dharma. Bhagavata dharma and bhakti is the most suitable process. Like this he mentions that, right? Tam jainam bhakti yogam dradaidumayime sadhyam aryogyamayuhu. Dishtya tatrabi sevyam tava charanamaho beshaja eva dugdham. He says this bhakti yogam, if I get firmly rooted, fixed in that bhakti, tam jainam bhakti yogam dradaidumayime sadhyam, if I become very strong in bhakti, if I develop such a strong bhakti in the heart, then sadhyam aryogyam ayuhu. Krishna asked Melpatur, what do you want for that? He says, I need good health first. When the body is miserable and it's withering away, then what can I do? And I need some lifetime also to continue with that. So Krishna says to Melpatur, serve me, you will get it. Dishtya tatrabi sevyam tava charanamaho beshaja eva dugdham. Beshaja eva dugdham means a child got sick. So child wants to drink some milk. And mother says to the child that you can't have milk now because you are sick. That milk won't digest and you will get sick. By then the physician comes. And physician says to the child, you should take milk every day, a small quantity. The child was very happy. In the same way, when the devotee says to Krishna, Melpatu says to Krishna that I need bhakti. Krishna says to Melpatur, you serve me, then you will have bhakti. Similar to this child situation, right? Bhakti process itself is very relishable. It's a beautiful process compared to jnanam or yogam. It's much easier and it's much more enjoyable, bhakti process. So, therefore, he's saying here also that Bhagavata dharmam bhakti is a different system altogether. There all these things, even if you know it or don't know it, it doesn't matter. But you have to have bhakti then. You can't have either this or that. Our situation is like that. We neither have this nor this. So this is our difficulty, right? So, Vedangam, right? So, Shiksha Vyagaranam, what we spoke about, right? This Shiksha, the first one, what we mentioned before, that's the way of saying things, Ucharana Shastram. They are all connected each other, and it is very difficult to independently study them. Normally, those who are studying this, you can see all our rishis are very... experienced in all these things, like Shaunaga Rishi. He wrote a book called Shaunaga Shiksha. Shiksha Shastram, Shaunaga Rishi has written that. Right? So, so, while pronouncing a word, what they call it as Udattam, അനുദാത്തം, സ്വരം, മാത്ര, വർണ്ണം, ദീസ് ആർ ഓൾ ദ ഡിഫറെന്റ് ബ്രാഞ്ചസ് ഓഫ് ദിസ് ശിക്ഷ. That means how to control the sound when it comes out of the mouth, how to control the tongue, and how to control the opening of the mouth, the throat, all these things connected with that, right? And this system existed without any fault through a disciplic succession, like that. Not like the way we talk about disciplic succession, but the teachers have taught them. And that means a structure for the way of speaking, right? And how, when you hear the sound through your ears, what impact it should create in you. These are things taken care of by the shiksha, right? So shiksha does that. That means when a word is spoken in the shastram, how, what impact that sound should create in you, and how it should be pronounced correctly, and if it is mispronounced, how it will alter the whole impact, effect in you. There's one example given in the Bhagavatam. Remember in the 6th canto, Indrashatro Vivardhaswa, that Tvashtava and Vishwarupa, that story, you will find there, mention this. So, Vyakaranam, or what we call grammar now, it defines the word very precisely. Very precisely it defines the word. And that word, when it is used in a particular format in the sentence, its validity analyzed very scientifically, and after that scientific analysis, it is acceptable. That science is Vyakarana Shastra. Panini wrote. Panini is very famous, more than anybody else. Lot of other books are written, Vyakaranam Shastram is written by others, like even Jiva Goswami wrote one book. Melpathura has written Prakriya Sarvasam, another book. There's so many like that. But all of them accept Panini as the greatest authority on this. Right? Then Chandasa. So, Chandasi is actually what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Chandamsi asyavarnani istum vedas vedavit. Right? Veda swarupam it is. Chandasa. Right? That means, Vedam is spoken in a certain way. And that swarupam, to maintain it without, it changes its form, the structure. Can you imagine Vedam? We don't know when it started all, isn't it? We don't have a time limit. But remain like that even today. How did that happen? Whereas everything else would have been changed, isn't it? In the flow of time, everything gets changed. Either they disappear or they get changed. Two things can happen. But Vedam survived all these years. From time immemorial, we don't even know when it has happened. 5,000 years we are talking about Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Even before that, Upanishads and Vedam existed. And when, even though our modern historians give some time and all, it has no meaning basically. They are just speculating on that. But for the people, for those authority like Acharyas and others, Vedam is eternal. Sanadhanam it is, right? So, just like Vedam is anadi, which has no beginning, Vedangam is also anadi. Right? But what is the difference then? Vedam is anadi, Vedangam is also anadi. Anadi means timeless, beginningless. That's what it's called. Right? So, the difference is this, that Vedangam were compiled by the rishis at different times. They are also anadi, but they were compiled by the rishis at different times. Different times, right? Vedam was not compiled by the rishis. These are very finer things about the Vedam to know. When you don't know, we are just accepting like Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. Somebody, you see, I'll give you an example. Normally, among educated people in the Vedic tradition, if someone comes and says to you that you chant the holy name, you should, and if you chant the holy name, you will get liberated from this material life, right? He says like that. For example, Prabhupada says to us that you chant the holy name, you will get liberated, and you won't have to accept another body again. He says like that, right? So, if an average person will ask Prabhupada, how can I accept it because you are telling me that? Why should I accept that? How do I know that what you are telling is the right thing? Then say, for example, Prabhupada says, no, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said like this. So on the strength of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I am saying this. But I can still say to him that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how do I know that you are telling me exactly the same thing what Mahaprabhu has said? I can ask that question. Is it not? So, and even how do I know that Mahaprabhu is telling the truth? How does he know? So this question will come. This naturally will come. But when Prabhupada says, no, Bhagavatam says this, immediately it is acceptable. Why? Bhagavatam belongs to the Veda. This is how you accept things. Not that somebody comes and says something that you have just accepted. No. Authority of the Vedam is more important than anything else. Right? So, similarly, Vedam, rishis have compiled Vedam. Rishis have, it has existed even before the rishis had come. But Vedam was existing always. Vedangam came back later from the rishis. But both are anadi. It exists forever. It exists forever. Right. So, therefore, Vedam alone is not the apaurusheyatvam. Apaurusheyam is Vedangam also. Is apaurusheyam. Apaurusheyam it is. Right. So, we must remember this, that when anything spoken in the modern world, people accept things based on somebody said like that. So I accept that way. But that is not exactly the way it was accepted in the past. In the past, whatever you say, if it is not supported by the Shastram, you don't need to accept it. You may or may not accept it. It's up to you then. But if Shastram says that, then you have to accept it. Like Bhagavatam says, if you chant the holy name, you get liberated. Many, many verses in the Bhagavatam, isn't it? Devahuti Devi says at the end, Kapilam, in the 12th canto, Sukha Brahma, she says, and the very end of Bhagavatam itself is that, the last verse, Nama Sankirtanam Yasya Sarvabhava Pranashanam Pranamo Dukkha Shamana Tam Namami Harim Param. So Bhagavatam finishes with the stressing the importance of the holy name. So it is on the strength of the Bhagavatam that we are accepting this. Not that Prabhupada said this or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that. That's not how you accept it. They are also taking the support of Bhagavatam. On the strength of the Bhagavatam, Mahaprabhu is saying this. On the strength of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada is also saying the same thing. But for both of them, the supporting strength behind that is Bhagavatam. And Bhagavatam is dependent on Vedam. So, now, Vyakaranam. If you talk about Vyakaranam, Vyakaranam is Avaurushayam, we are saying, and exists anadi also. But before Panini came, Vyakaranam did exist, right? But Panini's Sutram. He also wrote like Vedavyasa Maharshi wrote Brahma Sutram. In the same way, Panini wrote Vyakarana Sutram. Patanjali wrote Yoga Sutram. Jaimini wrote Karma Sutram. So, for Vyakaranam, Panini compiled what is called as Vyakarana Sutram. Right? So, Panini Sutrams were not there, but prior to that, Vyakaranam existed. But Panini put them up in an order. That's all what Panini has done. The Sutrams that existed before, Panini put them in a structured way, in a very structured way. That is how Panini Sutram became very famous. Then, Chandasa was also existed before it came as a, but there was an Acharya by name Pingalacharya. This Pingalacharya developed this Chandasa Sutram, right? And prior to him also, there were some Acharyas who have compiled this Chandasa Sutram, right? So, what these personalities have done, these Acharyas, what they have done, that they have taken the sutrams what was present before them and what they have learned from their own teachers, from the gurus, and they compiled it in their own way. That is how Panini's Sutram has come. And Pingalacharya's Chanda Sutram also has come in that way. What I am saying all this is, how many thousands of years it has taken to develop all these things in a particular format, and what's available today, how children are learning this in present world, right? So all these books were written at different times. They were not written in the same day or same year. At different times of the different rishis, they did this. And the important things to remember is that the thoughts or the ideas that they have put through these books, right, they are eternal. They don't change. What they have done is, they've given a structure to all that. That's all what they have done. They didn't develop anything new. What was already existing, I'm talking about Vedangam now. What was already existing, these Acharyas or Rishis, they have given a structure to that, so that those who came later could study that properly. That's what they have done. Right? So, just like Vedam is eternal, anadi, right? And similarly, what is spoken in the Vedam is also eternal, anadi, all the sacrifices, everything. Similarly, this Vedangam also, and the different darshanam, what the rishis have given, Patanjali and Kapila Maharshi and all that, Puranam, all these things do exist before, but they have put them in a particular format for us to get the benefit of that, because it was getting difficult to study when you don't know how to organize things. So they brought an order to everything, right? Now, Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled Srimal Bhagavatam at a juncture of a two yugam, isn't it? Like Dwapara Yugam finished and Kali Yugam begins. It is at that time, that's called Yuga Sandhi. Yuga Sandhi means one Yugam is finishing, another Yugam begins. So 5,000 years when we say Kali Yugam began, that was the time when Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled Srimal Bhagavatam. So that's a Yuga Sandhi. Dwaparam over, because he was born in Dwapara Yugam, and in the beginning of Kali Yugam he compiled these things, right? So, what was speciality with the Vedam? Vedam is not like that. Yugam and all that doesn't apply to Vedam. You get the point? Yugam, like Bhagavatam, you can give a time. 5,000 years ago, he compiled these things, right? The thoughts, that is, the points or the ideas that is discussed in the or spoken in the Vedam, or the letters that is presented in the Vedam, called the Varna Samoham. Varna Samoham means the compilation of all the Vedic mantram, Riks in the Rig Vedam, Yajurvedam, all these things. They are all eternal. They are not manufactured any particular day. They are existing forever, right? So that means all the ideas in the Vedam, when I say ideas, the points or the thoughts in the Vedam, and the karmam that is discussed in the Vedam, you have to accept them as anadi. Anadi means beginningless. They existed all the time. It doesn't have a start date, in other words. There is no start date. Nobody has started on a particular day. Right? So, therefore, for a Vedam, in order to maintain that Swarupam of the Vedam, they set up a tradition. The teacher and the student. Adhyayana Adhyabhaga Parambara. It's called Guru Shishya Parambara. Through that, wanted to maintain its format, the way it existed, right? That is how this Shiksha became very prominent. The part called Shiksha, right? Similarly, Vyagaranam, Chandas, all the others also. So, Shiksha, Vyagaranam, Chandas, these three are important for maintaining the structure of the Vedam as it is today from the very beginning, how it survived. Because these three Vedangam helped. Shiksha, Vyagaranam and Chandas. These three are the ones which maintained the purity of the Vedam. In other words, Vedam, what was spoken millions of years ago, remained as it is even today because of these three. Which one? Shiksha, Vyagaranam and Chandas. These three are the ones which is maintaining the format of the Vedam. You don't see this in any other scripture in the world, all these kind of things, isn't it? You don't see that anywhere else. All other books are written and they are edited and changed and all kinds of things, interpreted in a different way. But Vedam survived all this. Therefore, you see how intelligent they were, the rishis were. Because they knew it is an eternal thing. You can't tamper with it. You can't fiddle with it. So what they did, through this Shiksha, Vyagaranam and Chandas, with these three, they maintained the structure of the Vedam as it is from beginning to till today. That is the most important thing to know. How through Shiksha, Vyagaranam and Chandas, they maintained the structure of the Vedam totally unaffected by any change that's happening in this world. Otherwise, people like us would have edited that. But you couldn't do it now. Why? Because you have to know Shiksha, Vyagaranam, Chandas first. You see the problem, huh? That you can imagine how intelligent they were, the rishis, so that nobody could tamper with it. And if you edit it, you will make mistakes in one of these three. Shiksha, Vyagaranam, Chandas. If these three things are not fully in line with the Vedam, then that means you have edited it. So how to test any Vaidika mantram is perfect is through these three. Shiksha, Vyagaranam, Chandas. Yeah. So, similarly, what is spoken in the Vedam, the different karmam, yagam for example, homam, yajnam and all that, when you perform them, when you are doing that, right, that in order to protect them, you require this niruktam jyotisham, these two things, right? they are required. Niruktam and Jyotisham, right? So, Vedavihita Karma, which Krishna says that also in the Bhagavadam, right? To when you are chanting a Vaidika mantra, Veda mantra, while you are chanting that, in order to understand the meaning of that mantra, and what they call it as Arthavijaram. Arthavijaram means that in order to say there is a mantra, Vaidika mantra, and mantra has got an artham, meaning for that. So in order to absorb in that, which is called anusandhanam. For that anusandhanam, to do that, anusandhanam is connected with arthavijaram, artham of the mantra, right? And you can't directly derive a meaning from the Veda mantra. It's not possible. Because some of the Veda mantra, when you start reading, don't make any sense. It's so complex it is, right? So, because the process of the Arthavijaram, Arthavijaram means this meaning of the mantra, right? And the Vedaya mantra, that relationship, right? You require Niruktam for that, to know that. You know that so many great personalities have written trying to give their commentary on the Veda. For example, Dayananda Saraswati wrote. In the modern times, Aravinda Ghosh wrote. But nobody else has done it, you could say, 100% right. Nobody could do it. Because unless you are a master of all these sciences, you couldn't do it. You couldn't do it. So, so Nirukta means that these words in the mantra, in the Vedam, how I should understand the meaning, right? And that is where Niruktam comes. Niruktam comes in. Yeah. So, just like, it's quite complex all this is. Because Vyakarana Shastram, Vyakarana means this, what we call grammar in the modern way. But Vyakarana Shastram will explain a particular word, right? But certain times, Vyakarana Shastram won't be able to do it. At that time, Niruktam is required. Niruktam is required. So, that means that when you are trying to understand one some of the hymns in the Vedam, it may not be directly related to the Swarupam, Veda Swarupam. In other words, the words in the Vedam. But with the help of the Niruktam, you will understand it. Right? Just like astrology, for example, Jyotisham, what we spoke this morning, it is primarily connected to Kala. Kala Ganana. Kala Ganana means the time factor. Right? For what purpose do you have to refer to time? Because to perform these sacrifices, you need to know the Muhurtam, or the appropriate time for that. Right? So, these two Vedangam, for example, Niruktam and Vyakaranam, right? They don't have direct relationship with Arthavijaram. Arthavijaram means that Vedam, when you want to understand the meaning of the Vedam, or performing the karmam, they are not directly related to that. Whereas Shiksha, Chandasa, Vyakaranam, they are directly controlling the Veda. These two are indirectly controlling. Only if you study all these branches in detail, you will see this proper understanding will come from that, right? So, whichever way you look at it, right? That some of them are directly controlling the Vedam, some of them are indirectly doing it, right? But all of them are there to support Vedam, to support Vedam. And that is why they are called Vedangam, Vedangam, right? So Vedam is nothing but a collection of so many words, isn't it, in there, right? So it is considered to be like a person, a form, right? And just like, you know, Viral Purusha, in the same way. You remember? Viral Purusha. In the same way, Vedam also. Viral Purusha means that this creation itself, you are considering it as a person. And you see this, we give the heavenly planets as its head and all, like that. And the lotus feet as the lower planetary systems. So the whole thing is, this is a sangalpam it is. It's not, there's no person existing like that. In your sangalpam, you create like that. To talk about this world, you say, Virat Purusha. Virat, isn't it? In the same way, Vedam is also spoken in the same format, right? And so this Viral Swarupam, when it is discussed in that format as a person, that is what is called Purusha Suktam. Purusha Suktam prayers, you know, which are very famous, isn't it? This Purusha Suktam prayers is a sangalpam varnana of a like a Purusha man has got his hands, his legs, and his eyes, and his nose, and his ears, and in that way, these are all his limbs of this body. So, in that way, these six different Vedangam is considered to be part of that body of the Veda Purusha. Veda Purusha's different body. Chandas is considered to be the feet. The hands are considered to be Kalpam. The eyes are considered to be Jyotisham. The ears are considered to be the Niruktam. And the Shiksha is this Nasiya, the nose. And the face or the mouth is considered to be the grammar, Vyakaranam. Right? Mukham, it says. Mukham is not face, actually it is the mouth. In this context. Right? So, if you consider Vedam as a person, that person's different limbs in the body is these six different ones. Chandas is feet, hands are the Kalpam, the eyes are Jyotisham, the ears are Niruktam, the nose is Shiksha, and the mouth is Vyakaranam. Right? So, suppose you are studying Vedam, for example. You may wonder why it takes so long to study Vedam, isn't it? Vedam, if you are studying Vedam means, if you study the Vedam without this Vedangam, what you studied about Vedam is incomplete. You know, so that is how it is. If you are studying Vedam, you have to study Vedangam as well. Now, we spoke about this 14 Vidyasthanam. Remember, 4 plus 6 plus 4. 4 Vedam, 6 Shastram, and other 4 as well. So, what is their benefit of studying that? So, like words, sentences, then the grammar, and then there is Mimamsa, then Pramanam, Tarkam. With all the help of all these things, one has to understand Vedam. The words, the sentences, and then the grammar. Then there is Mimamsa, which is last four. Mimamsa, Tarkam, Itihasam, Smriti, all that is comes later. So, with the help of all these things only, you will be able to understand the meaning of the Vedam. So that is why it's so difficult. Who has the knowledge like that? To study all these things and able to come out. that has to have, that person must be a great personality who has that capacity, right? He says here that how to understand Vedam, which is the most difficult thing, is it not? Vedam nobody understands. It's so difficult, right? Krishna says, I am the only person who understands Vedam. He says like that, isn't it? Ekadasha Skanda. He says, right. So, so because it is like that, from Krishna's statement and from all this understanding the Vedam Vedangam, you can immediately realize that it's not so simple. You can study whole life and still you will be nowhere, anywhere near to, there are people with, that's why after studying so many years, you start realizing you're nowhere, you're not getting anywhere with this Vedic literature. That's the nature of that, right? So, these instructions, what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam or elsewhere for that matter, you can listen in two different ways, right? There are certain things which is beyond our materialistic understanding of things, right? That means certain things in this world you cannot understand with this mind and intelligence in this world itself. There are certain things, right? Achindya ye khalu bhaval natham tarkeda yojayet. That means that in Bhagavad Gita commentary, Acharya Swamiji says this, that never think that there is anything in this world. You should always understand it this way, that there are things in this world which cannot be understood by buddhi, by intelligence alone. Because we always have this problem. We think everything should be possible to understand through mind and intelligence. This is our normal approach, isn't it? Science is also like that. This is a science problem. Science says to us, if you cannot make me understand, prove it to me, then I will accept it. This is the science logic. Prove it to me, then I will accept it. Or show it to me, then I will accept it. But Acharya Swamiji says there are things in this world which cannot be understood by your intelligence and mind. Accept that first, he says. Right? So, there are topics here where our own intelligence cannot go in and understand. Right? And therefore, he says, in such situations, you shouldn't argue. That you bring tarkam into it. Tarkam means your argumentative nature. And bringing tarkam and disturb your intelligence with that. That's not good. That's what he's saying there. In the Bhagavad Gita commentary, he says this. Right? Then, he says here that arsham. Arsham means that the dharmam, what is spoken in the Vedam, it's called arsham, right? And when it is spoken through the rishis, it's called arsham, right? And those things, if you try to understand in your own way, you won't get it. It's not possible. Right? And he is saying there that Vedam Shastram, all these things, in order to study them and to analyze them and able to absorb the message in that, one who does not have that capacity, he does not understand dharmam, he says. It's quite complex, the whole thing is. Then there are so many things spoken in the Shastram, right? But to understand the Shastram and what is spoken in the Shastram, able to analyze it and scrutinize it properly, and able to grasp the message from that, one who does not have the capacity, he will never be able to know the dharmam, he says. Dharmam is very difficult. You remember that in the Bhagavatam how it's spoken, right? Dharmostu sarshal bhagaval pranidam. Right? Na te vidu krishayo nabhi deva. In the sixth canto you will find these words. Dharmam is the most difficult thing to know. And dharmam and brahmam is the topic in the Vedam. Brahmam is the soul and dharmam is the process. Both of them are difficult to know. How complex it is. Dharmostu sarshal bhagavat pranidam nade vidu krishayo nabhi deva. They will see these words in the sixth canto. Neither siddhas, manushyas, charanas, gandharvas, nobody understands dharmam. In the Bhagavatam says like that. So why it is said like that? Because this is the reason. That one who has got this capacity to understand the dharmam through the process of Vedam and Shastram, he alone will understand dharmam properly. He alone can understand dharmam properly. When you read these things, you will appear as though it is contradicting the way it is spoken like that. Right? So, but the thing is this, that tarkam means argument. Right? Argument, you cannot bring this into it. And in the second part it says, first part it says, you can't bring tarkam into it. Tarkam means argument. You can't bring argument into this topic. The reason is this, there are certain things in this world which is beyond your capacity to understand. You may be highly intelligent, but still you won't be able to understand certain things in this world. You know, it's very not difficult to understand what I'm saying, isn't it? For example, can the science tell us why I'm born in a particular place and you're born in a different place? No answer. Can it tell us how many years I'm going to live here and what's the logic behind it? They can't tell us. When I will be born, when I will die, and similarly, the reason behind my birth, reason behind my death, all these things is unknown to us. So that is why Acharya Swamiji is saying there that don't bring your argument business into everything. There are a lot of things in this world where you don't know anything about it, why it's happening, right? Just like you can see suddenly there is floods, right? So floods, they'll say heavy rain, fine. Heavy rain has happened. Then they will say, oh, there is this low pressure building up somewhere. And so what made the low pressure to build up first? They don't have a detailed understanding of the whole thing. Why certain elements in this world, like fire or water or air or earth, when they get upset, how they got upset? Can you explain that? You can't. So from that itself you can understand that your logic and argument or finish stops there, isn't it? It can't go further than that. It's there, it finishes. So there are many things in this world where you can't use your logic and argument. That's the first thing to accept, number one. That first thing we should know, my power of logic and reasoning can only go up to a certain point. After that it stops. Many things in this world, You can't explain based on logic and reasoning, isn't it? That's the first thing to know. Secondly, what they're saying, when you're studying Vedam or Shastram, where Dharma is spoken, you should have the capacity to use logic and reasoning through the Shastram and understand it. So, two things. On one side it says you don't need reasoning and logic, cannot work. On the other side it says you do need reasoning and logic to understand Dharma. It's quite a complex way the whole thing is. It's not so simple as we think about it. Prabhupada made everything too simple for us. Through chanting and reading, read Srimad Bhagavatam and hear Bhagavatam, chant the holy name. That's the easiest, simplest way it has made. But if you look into it a little bit more and deeper level, you can see that it is not that easy for us. That to understand all these things, so many complex things in this creation, where we have no even understanding what is behind it. So, tarkam. Tarkam means this argument and argumentative way. This tarkam is required where? To understand through the Shastram and Vedam, to understand Dharmam, you require tarkam. Where tarkam is accepted, necessary also. Right? So, so only through tarkam, that is why you will see there in the commentaries and all, purvavaksham, uttaravaksham. This purvavaksham means the questions coming. Uttaravaksham means the answer for that. That the commentator himself is raising the questions. That means he is arguing this against it. And then he is finding the answer through the same thing. That's how this has come. Purvavaksham, uttaravaksham. You will see that. So, now, it may appear as though this is contradictory, what he is saying here, right? This tarkam, or argument, in two ways it comes, right? You can argue without any authority behind you, right? That is Veda Shastra Virodham, it is. Say, for example, you met somebody on the street and you are talking to him about Krishna consciousness or Bhagavad Gita or anything. No, he can argue with you with his understanding. He hasn't read Bhagavad Gita. And you tell him about the soul, he will argue against you. Would he not? He will say, have you seen the soul? He will ask. If you say, I haven't seen the soul, but Shastram, I can conclude from the Shastram, there is soul exist in this way, with various ways, right? Just like, you remember? I don't know whether you remember. We mentioned this. I am not this body. Body is not mine. Body is not for my enjoyment. I am making a statement like this, right? If somebody says this to you, how do you know that I am not this body? How will you answer that question? It all depends on how much mananam you have done. Only if you have done mananam, you will be properly able to convince that person that he won't be able to argue against you on this point, right? So, everything in the Vedam is like that. That when you make a statement, I'm not this body, or body is not mine, body is not for my enjoyment, it has to be supplemented with proper reasoning behind it. And that should come from the Vedam. The supporting arguments also should come from the Vedam. So, if you are using the Vedic logic and you are proving the point from the Vedic statement, that is acceptable. That is acceptable, right? But if you start, if you say to somebody, I'm not this body, and that person is questioning you, right? That person is questioning you. And you say to him, look, Krishna said this in the Bhagavad Gita, that I am not this body. I am accepting that. You should also accept that. That won't fly. It won't fly. See, this is the difference. This preaching has to have certain reasoning behind it also. If you just tell a person that, Krishna said this in the Bhagavad Gita, I am not this body. Prabhupada said like this, so I accept that, why don't you accept that? He says, why should I? That's not the way to put this forward. Therefore, Vedam, when Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that we are not this body, it's also coming from the Vedam. You have to remember that. It's not that he is making a statement out of himself, on his own. He is taking it from the Vedam. Everything in the Bhagavad Gita is from the Vedam. But it is put in a format suitable for ordinary people to take on board. Right? So, if you are, then this person who says, and then you get into an argument with somebody in the street about it, soul exists or doesn't exist, right? You argue about it, each other. That is waste of time. Shushka tarkam, it's called. That means you are completely wasting your time. Nothing will come out of it because it is not convincing anybody either. So that is why I am saying that that tarkam which brings no results is useless. Is useless. And that is why it's called shushka tarkam, waste of time, dry logic it's called, right? And so that kind of tarkam, is sometimes not useful in the studying the Shastram, right? So, but there is tarkam which does not belong to that argument, which does not belong to this category, right? And that we have to take shelter of, because sometimes our own intelligence will cheat us. You are completely depending on your mind and intelligence, isn't it? Sometimes your own intelligence will cheat you in certain instances, right? Because, say for example, in your experience level, you are accepting certain things in your experience level, right? But Buddhi will tell you something different. It is not like that, right? Why shouldn't be like this? Why shouldn't be like that? Some questions will come up in the mind, right? So, at that moment, to control your intelligence and to make it go in the right path, we require some logic, because Buddhi always accepts logic, isn't it? That's how Buddhi survives. Buddhi means intelligence. Intelligence survives because of logic. In certain instances, your logic, Buddhi will not work in the right way. So at that time, in order to bring the Buddhi in under control, you require certain logic from outside. So now all this is not applicable to bhakti, right? People who are absorbed in the bhakti 100%, they don't need any of these things. Do you understand what I'm saying? Then bhakti is such a thing, but you have to have bhakti. No point in saying that I am a bhakta. That is not going to make solve the problem. Then just because I declare myself to be a bhakta, that doesn't solve the problem. If you have bhakti in the heart, proper bhakti, then all these things are not important anymore. Bhakti alone will take you to the goal at the end. You don't need anything. But those who, most of us are, don't have the bhakti, isn't it? That is the truth. You don't have the bhakti. So, for them, most of the people belong to that category. If bhakti is there, then there is no problem, right? And majority of people are without bhakti in this world, right? So, it is their situation is what is discussed and analyzed here, right? So, two kinds of arguments spoken. One is called shushka tarkam, dry argument, without any reasoning, without any support of the Vedam or Shastram, completely coming out from your mind and on that basis arguing. Secondly, tarkam based on the Vedam and the Shastram. which is not against the Vedam or the Shastram. That Tarkam is acceptable. So you know, in the olden days, in the assembly of the kings, when they had all these, the Vakyartha Sadasya, that means all the scholars will be invited, and they will have arguments, each other. But all of them will adhere to Shastram, not dry arguments. That's a big difference. That is why they were able to define who is a winner and who is a loser on that basis. Otherwise, you can't decide. Suppose you don't have any rules and regulations. You are just arguing for argument's sake. You can argue day and night. It won't get anywhere. So, Tarkam itself is these two categories. One, Shushka Tarkam. Shushka Tarkam means simply arguing for argument's sake. Right? Just to shut you up so that you can't argue anymore. In that way, arguing. That's useless. That doesn't make any sense. So just to keep you quiet. I keep on arguing about, you know, sometimes people do like that, isn't it? That is not allowed. What's allowed is, after studying all Vedam Shastram, that means everything you argue has to be supported by the Shastram. Otherwise, it's not acceptable. Right? So that argument, that Tarkam is allowed. That argument is allowed. Right? So, all the Shastram, or the different branches, Shastra Shaka, Shastra Grandam, which is connected with the Vedangam, is all like that, in this way, right? Purva Mimamsa, Uttara Mimamsa, Nyayam, Vaisheshikam, Darshanam, right? So, all these things are like this, in this way, right? So, so Nyayam, for example, Nyayam, Gautama Maharshis, Vaisheshikam, Kanada Maharshi, right? Kanada Maharshi's Vaisheshikam is what we modern science is trying to talk about, this particles, right? And Gautama Maharshi's Nyayam is logic, right? Even though directly it does not explain Vedartham, right? But still this Darshanam, Nyaya Vaisheshika Darshanam, through that, through these two, who has studied them, for him, he can go into Mimamsa. Mimamsa Shastra. Mimamsa is the one where Jaimini has got Purva Mimamsa and Vedavyasa has Uttara Mimamsa. Uttara Mimamsa is called Vedanta. And Jaimini wrote Karma Sutram for Mimamsa Shastra, where he accepts all the Yagam, Yajnam and everything in the Vedam as the perfection of life. Right? So, it is through Nyayam, Vaisheshikam and all, you enter into Mimamsa, right? So, Rishis taken this approach, that Vedam, in order to explain the Vedam, right, the authority is with the rishis who have done that, but it is not based on the yogic power, not based on the yoga power. And there are certain branches in there. One has to know that for understanding the Vedam, Vedartha Nirnayam, it's called, to understand the meaning of the Vedam. So, for example, you can see here, Mimamsa, for that purpose, right? It is important to know what this is all about, right? Due to change in the time, right? At one time, Mimamsa was very prominent. Mimamsa means yajnam, performing yajnam. They were very prominent at one time, right? And due to influence of time, that has changed. Now what is prominent? Bhagavadam. Bhagavadam became very prominent. It's a new thing it is. In the last few hundred years, Bhagavadam has taken over everywhere in spiritual life, right? So,
So, due to the changes in the time, right? The popularity of the different aspects of the Vedam will change. At one time, Mimamsa was popular. Today, Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, these things have become very popular. Right? Right. So, this depends on so, what happens? Why it has become prominent? Right? One reason is, of course, the way it is propagated. Right? The way it's propagated. Right? And also, the state of mind of the people in that particular time who lives in this world. People in this world today who are living, our state of mind also you have to take into account in these things. You may start wondering why now people say now, oh, Mimamsa is not valid anymore. It is because under the influence of time, our mind has changed. We are not able to accommodate the Mimamsa anymore in our mind. Yajnam and all that. Its importance and also the popularity of the Mimamsa has faded away. And Bhagavatam has come over and other things have taken over. Right? So, so what happens is, due to this change in the time of history in different times, right? And depending on the people's nature who are listening to the Shastram, right? Some people will interpret this Shastram according to the time. According to the time, they will interpret the Shastram according to the time. Right? So, and that will not protect Vedam. Vedam will not be protected by like that. Because Vedam, its meaning, artham, and that is in the Arsha tradition, in the Rishi's traditions, is not accepted that way. Arsha Sampradaya. For example, Srimad Bhagavatam, right? Srimad Bhagavatam has been commented or interpreted by different acharyas in different ways. Is it not? Sridharacharya commented, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, and then Jiva Goswami. They all have their own commentaries on the Bhagavatam. On the Bhagavatam. But on the Vedam, no. You can't do that. You can't do that. So, but Bhagavatam, when you interpret it like that, in different ways, there is no there is no trouble in that. Why is that? When does the trouble comes? Right? For example, you see the problem here. Just to create bhakti in the heart of people, right? If you start interpreting Bhagavatam whichever way you like it, so that you are creating bhakti in the heart of somebody, right? If you start doing that, it will create problem. You know that. You know what I'm saying? For example, in Srimad Bhagavatam, there are so many things. And in the modern world, if you look, how they, different people, use Bhagavatam for different purposes. And they explain Bhagavatam in a particular way to suit the audience. This is all happening in this world, right in front of us. People use Bhagavatam to, they have a motive behind it, whatever that may be. And accordingly, that there is a, this is a problem in the Bhakti Margam. In Bhakti Margam, right, they say that all I need, I'm saying all these things, even though I'm adding on to it a lot of things which are not in the book. I'm saying all these things, that it is helping that person to develop bhakti in the heart. So it's okay. For example, you can see when Bhagavatam comes to Rukmini Swayamvaram, Rukmini's marriage to Krishna, the people will want to celebrate in a big way. Rukmini's marriage, right? So they make a big feast out of it, and lot of sweets distributed. And they say young girls should come for this, they should hear this Rukmini Swayamvaram, so they will get married soon. Things like that. All kind of, this is all interpretations of the particular person who is speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. It is his freedom, he is abusing, misusing it. But it helps to get people to come. A lot of people will come then. Otherwise people won't come for anything. If you just tell them everything in the Srimad Bhagavatam openly, nobody is interested. So therefore, to make it more attractive to others, people use Bhagavatam in this way. There are many things like that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, right? And if you ask them, the question is, I said, well, it helps them to develop bhakti in the heart, right? So this Krishna's experience, ultimately what is Bhagavatam? To understand Krishna, to experience Krishna inside, bhakti inside, right? So, the person who is hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, he will experience it to the extent depending on his maturity inside. That is how Bhagavatam is. Bhagavatam will be relished by people according to his maturity, how matured he is. You remember we talked about four kinds of speakers and four kinds of listeners. That four kinds of listeners, depending on the type of listener you are, you will absorb it to that extent inside. Right? So, simply by making Bhagavatam a big function, thousands of people to come, and making it very musical and entertaining and attractive to people, and big feast and decorations and everything, it's not necessary that you are trying to develop bhakti in that way, because that bhakti won't last. That bhakti won't last very long. This is the problem, right? So, better than that is that devotees serious who are interested in the Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam sit together, a small group, and discuss it properly, proper way, rather than having a huge, this is the modern trend, isn't it? That you have huge pandal, big auditorium, 50,000 people, 100,000 people sitting there, and a massive stage with television sets on either side, and you are going there to have some bhakti in the heart, and this whole scene itself is very overpowering. A lot of money has been spent on the whole thing, and very entertaining, good music, good prasadam, and you also feel you are a part of that. That bhakti won't last. It won't stay. It's not proper bhakti. What you are having there is some excitement of that moment. That's all. It's not getting anything more than that. And then as soon as you come out, that's gone. Nothing has been understood. Nothing. Sometimes you'll see this. It's a curse in the Kali Yuga, this thing. Because we've got all these facilities now. That's why they're doing this. Remember in Rishi's time, and all the great devotees' time, they didn't have all this facility like the way it is we have today. They didn't have big marquees and big tents and big car parking facilities. None of these existed. And they did a better job than us today. Haven't they? So they understood better Bhagavatam than what we understand from Bhagavatam today. So you can see that this modern way, how this can pull down the whole thing together. So you feel that you are gone there for bhakti. But when you came out, where is the bhakti? What you supposed to have got from there? It didn't come. Even though so much money was spent, invested in that, so much energy was put into it to organize all these things, manpower, and so much effort to make a thing like that. It happens all the time now. All over India you see this now. This tendency, right? But bhakti will depend upon the maturity of the person. maturity of the person, right? Instead of just to get people to come, you can go and do anything to suit them, to bring them in. That's wrong. That's wrong, actually. That doesn't help. That's a waste of time and money. Just to get the people to come, you make it, you say that when you see some of those leaflets also, when they print, you will see car parking facilities. Everything very organized when you go there. The volunteers are there, all with the badges on. And this will not help bhakti. This is not going to generate any bhakti. You just feel that you are also a part of it. That's all. And similarly, you know, how difficult it is to organize a function like that. The money involved, the manpower involved, and all the organization required, right? So, better than that is, even if you have a few people, but you have some serious discussions about Bhagavatam, right? So, bhakti is a difficulty, I'm saying. These are problems in the bhakti, right? So, whether you are propagating bhakti, whether you are propagating shastram, or whether you are propagating Vedam, whatever it may be, that Vedic system is always to do it in small groups, not in big groups. In Vedam, never it was a system to do things in a big way. It was not a system at all, right? So, when we have got a system, what is already rishis have set up like that, and they have their own way of commenting on this, and whether their literature is available for that purpose, to suit this kind of discussion. And if you go through this way, then the chances of getting into trouble is little, if you follow this process. Right? So, therefore, the Vyakhyana means commenting process, what existed then was also on this understanding. For example, there are so many commentaries on the Bhagavatam, right? So, that sampradaya, Vyakhyanam, commenting system, existed like this, that it has come through different paramparas. For example, we can see, if you take Vishwanatha Chakravarti's commentary on Bhagavatam, Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradayam has accepted that, and that continued like that. Similarly, Advaita Siddhantam, they accepted through Sridharacharya's commentary like that. In this way, it existed in this world. It hasn't caused any problem for anybody. Right? So, if you leave behind, if you follow that process, that means the Sampradaya system of accepting the Shastram through that parampara is not harmful. Right? Now, leave behind Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is system is like that. But Vedam, you can't even do that with Vedam. Right? It's very serious thing it is. See, Bhagavatam, different acharyas have commented differently. It hasn't caused any problem, serious problems from that. It hasn't caused any problem. Because those who have followed Vishwanatha Chakravarti, those who have followed Sridhara Swami, or those who have followed Vallabhacharya, they all have their sampradayam supporting them, and that is acceptable because it has developed bhakti at the end in people's mind. So, you can't criticize anybody on that basis. It has all developed bhakti in the heart of people, so they are acceptable. Now, Vedam is not like that. Vedam, you can't even touch that by any means, right? Because Vedam is parama pramanam, means Bhagavatam, if you have made some mistake, you can refer to Vedam and understand what exactly it is saying, right? Through the help of Vedam, you can understand Bhagavatam. Right? But if Vedam, if you start interpreting and commenting, then you have nowhere else to go to find the right understanding. Right? So, therefore, Vedam is not commented like the way you comment Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita or any other literature. Right? First of all, it is not normal Sanskrit language, Vedam. It is not, right? Srimad Bhagavatam, Ramayanam, Mahabharatam and all is normal Sanskrit language. Vedam is not. There's a big difference between the Vedam, the Sanskrit in the Vedam, and the Sanskrit in the Puranam, Sanskrit in the Bhagavatam, as well as in the Ramayanam, Mahabharatam, all that, right? And this language of Sanskrit in the Ramayanam, Mahabharatam, and Bhagavatam and all, even today you can understand, if you read it, right? And that means in Vyavaharam also, the language of Sanskrit that is used in Vyavaharam is more or less the similar to what is in the Bhagavatam, Ramayanam, Mahabharatam, etc. But Vedam is not like that. The Sanskrit in the Vedam is different, right? Because this understanding is necessary about Vedam. Why? Because Vedam is controlled by all the Vedangam. Right? And within that framework, only you can understand Vedam. That means with the help of Vedangam like Niruktam, Jyotisham, Chandasa, Vyakaranam, Kalpam, with all the six of them, only with their support if you study Vedam, you will get a proper understanding. Right? And it is a compulsory requirement that only through Vedangam you can study Vedam. Say for example, if I decide I want to study Vedam, right? And I went to some matham or somewhere and they say they let me study Vedam. And if I have only, I tell them that look, I'm only interested in the Vedam, I'm not interested in all this Vedangam. They say you can go home. Don't waste your time. So Vedam means understanding Vedam through the Vedangam. Vedangam is necessary to understand Vedam, right? And it is a compulsory requirement, right? The reason for that is that we have a nature, human nature. We don't want to be controlled, isn't it? Our mind will ask, why not like this? Why not like that? This freedom for thought, what they call it, freedom for thought is too much sometimes. It makes us useless at the end, right? That means that swadandram or independence what you have to do things like that is not acceptable. Those who want to study Vedam, it is not acceptable for that. Then how far your independence is allowed, how far you got the freedom, right? And this applies to everything in the Vedam. You know what I am saying? Why I am saying this is that a child, if he is going to Vedam, why he is given the education of the Vedam from the early days itself in life before he developing this independent nature? After he has developed the independent nature, if you go and study Vedam, it won't work for him because his mind will cause problem for him from inside. Whereas before he becomes independent and starts asking, why not like this, why not like that, this is not convincing to me, when he makes statements like that, prior to that, you have to get him in this track. You know, as you grow up, the mind grows, isn't it? Intelligence also. And it will only cause problems at the end. So that is why they say that, for example, pronunciation, you call it, pronunciation of the letters, right? Each letter has to be pronounced in a particular way. Now, if I say to them that, well, I can't pronounce it like this, this is the way I will pronounce, if I say that, they'll say, no, I have to change your body to make it the right way. Then they will start twisting my neck and twisting my mouth and teaching me how to twist the tongue and everything. So all these things you can only do when you are small. After you are grown up, at the age of 60, after retirement, I am going to study Vedam. It's better not. It is not going to work. Right? It cannot work. That's the problem with this. Right? So therefore, for teaching Vedam, to study Vedam, and to recite Vedam, all these things, certain things, from time immemorial, they have put these restrictions. You should start the study way before this age. Afterwards, no. They put these restrictions from that, right? And this has not happened on a particular time in the history. From the beginning, it has been like that, right? And just like Vedam survived all these years, in the same way, these rules also survived. You see? These rules also survived in the same way, like Vedam survived, right? So, that means, only with the help of Vedangam, you should speak Vedam, recite Vedam, and when you are performing the sacrifices, also, Vihita Karmam, or what is spoken in the Vedam, and when you are explaining the Vedam, in all these situations, to a large extent, it is due to the influence of this Vedangam that it has survived like this. Otherwise it couldn't have. People would have modified. For example, Ashwamedham, Rajasuyam and all that. How long has it survived? You remember, Bhagavatam says that Ugrasena wanted to perform Rajasuyam. Yudhishthira performed Rajasuyam. Prior to that, Varuna has performed a Rajasuyam, way before. Because Hiranyaksha goes and tells Varuna, you performed a Rajasuyam. That means Hiranyaksha's time. Now the Rajasuyam, what was then performed by Yudhishthira later, and Ugrasena wanted to perform later, much later, all these things remained as it is intact only because of this. Vedam and Vedangam. Right? Otherwise, it's not possible. You know, we are people. You can see our tendency, right? For example, everything in the deity worship, Agni is necessary, fire. The lamp is a symbol of that. The lamp is burning. Because originally everything is Agni. We will say, why fire? It will smoke alarm will go up. So we will put some nice electric lights. We'll say, do like that. Is it not? Our nature is like that. Similarly, we started realizing gold jewelry is given to Krishna normally. But then what we found out that imitation jewelry is available plenty. So it does the same job because for the man who is taking photos, it's okay. Imitation jewelry is enough. But his Krishna will be thinking, this guy is putting imitation jewelry on me. I will also give him imitation bhakti then. Is it not? So you can see how our mind works. We will look for loopholes. Wherever there is something makes easier for us, we will take that route. That's our nature. Human nature is like that. So this difficulty will come to Vedam also. Vedic sacrifices require so many things. Qualified people, then place where you perform the sacrifice, then the ingredients what you require. Now, suppose ghee is required from the cow, pure ghee, right? If I say to the much better ghee is available in Tesco, I'm bringing you the best from the West. Why don't you use it? If you say, your mind will go like that. I got the best ghee, pure Deshi ghee, branded butter from the from the tin. Well, it must have been made in the factory somewhere. Doesn't matter. It is pure, I'm saying, because it's not contaminated, but it's not acceptable. It's not acceptable, right? So there are things like this. Our nature is always to find a substitute to make everything easy for us. Now, you just to give an example, that lamps you burn, right? All you have to do is to plug it, isn't it? Normally. But if you have lamps, normally lamps, you have to pour the oil, make the wicks, light it, and every time you have to check the oil is there, so the wicks don't burn. All that problem gone. It's burning all the time nicely. All you have to do is to put the plug on. So this is our nature, I'm saying. It's always like that in everything, right? Similarly, the first we say, oh, this 21 kilometer Govardhana Parikrama is too long. Maybe we can do it on a scooter parikrama or auto rickshaw. We'll get it and do it. And it's the same thing. and everything we will try to make it to suit our nature. So this shouldn't happen to Vedam. So therefore, what the rishis done, they put all these kind of rules and regulations around it, so that you cannot tamper with it. That's how it survived so long. So here he is saying here that then Vedangam also survived because of Vedam. Vedam survived because of Vedangam. Right? So Shiksha, for example, we begin with Shiksha first. When you talk about Shiksha, it is through Shiksha this Varna Ucharanam, that means the letters are spoken correctly and taught. And in the Upanishads you will find this mention. In Taittiriya Upanishad, Atha Shiksha Kya Vyakhyasyama, it says. Atha Shiksha Vyakhyasyama. There is one of the sutram in the Taittiriya Upanishad, right? Varna Ucharanam, that means the letters, how it's spoken, is called a Shiksha. Varnam Swaram Matra and Halam Sandhanam. There are six systems controlling Shiksha, right? Shiksha Shastram, right? So, as far as Vedam is concerned, this Shiksha Shastram has got these six different requirements, right? And that is highly technical. About letters, this is all about letters, right? So, it is connected with how you pronounce the Vedika Mantram. Vaidika Mantram, how you pronounce that, is dependent on this. Now, the only reason that Prabhupada didn't explain, say any of these things, in any of the books even, is because bhakti is independent of all this. You have to always remember that bhakti is not dependent on any of these things. That is the reason for that, right? So, how this pronunciation, but the problem is, when you're studying Srimad Bhagavatam, all these things comes in one way or the other. So completely to separate that is also difficult, right? So if you ask the question, then how is it connected with the Vedam, the Shiksha, right? So Akaram, that means A-A-E-E, in this way, then different Varnam, how you speak that, then ka ka ganga ga kachata pata adi nyayam, they call it ka ka ganga ga cha cha janjanya tata dandana papa bambama tata dandana, in that way all these letters first we have to learn how to say it properly, the proper way it should come out from the mouth, right? And that's already been defined very clearly, how they should be spoken. Similarly, Swaram. Swaram means, it has got this Udatam, Anudatam, that means higher pitch, lower pitch, middle pitch, in that way, right? Then there is Swaram in the Sangeetam also, music, there is Swaram, you'll find. Krishabam, Gandharam, there are seven Swarams spoken like that. So, then that matra. Matra means hraswam, virgham, pritham. That means shortened form, extended form, and in the middle form. Right. Then, while speaking the letters, where the stress should be, each letter. Right. Then, similarly, matra, the quantity you have to speak that. So, all these are part of the Shiksha. Right. Then there is a samam, means that the order in which you pronounce the letters and the speed in which you speak, right, and how fast it should be spoken, certain thing. If you go to any gurukulam where children are taught, and if you sit there for some time and observe these things, you will notice this thing. The teacher or the guru controlling the children about the speed in which they have spoken, right? So, Varnam, Swaram and the speed, all these things that is called Samam. Not Samavedam, this is called Samam. Samam means the Varnam, its Swaram, and the speed in which Vegam it is spoken, right? So, these are two technical things. It goes much more deeper than that, right? Then there is what is called as the continuation of that, right? So, Samhita. Samhita. Samhita means how it is all structured and stored in the Vedam, right? Varnam, Swaram, Matra, Balam, Samam, and all these are spoken in the Shiksha Grantham. So, Shiksha is all about these things, right? Shiksha and you know who are the personalities who have written books on the Shiksha? Yajnavalkya Maharshi wrote a book called Yajnavalkya Shiksha. Narada Maharshi wrote a book called Narada Shiksha. Vasishtha Maharshi wrote a book called Vasishtha Shiksha. And then Mandavya Maharshi wrote a book called Mandavya Shiksha. So, Shiksha books are the creation of all these rishis. All these books are available to study Shiksha, right? And then you have got commentaries on that, on all this Shiksha literature, right? And all these books are available today. It's not that they have gone out of print or anything like that. Books are available and that is still being taught also. So, because they are all still there, that is why Vedam is still existing in the world today, right? And because the Shiksha is existing, all the other Vedam is also existing today. Otherwise, they can't exist on its own. Because if it is not there, it won't make any sense to the rest, right? So, Vedam is give prominence to sound. Shabda Pradhanam. It is Shabda Brahmam it is. Vedam. Right? That means, it does not mean that the meaning, suppose sometimes people misunderstand it like this. If you tell them Vedam is sound oriented, that means Shabda Pramanyam. That means Artham is not important then. No, Artham is also important. Shabdam is important, Artham means the meaning, is also important. But Shabdam is more important than the Artham, right? So, other books, for example, Shabdam is not important. Even Bhagavadam, Shabdam is not important. Artham is important. For Vedam, Shabdam is important. I'm just saying all these things to understand connection between Bhagavadam and the Vedam, right? For Vedam, Shabdam is important. Artham is also important. But Shabdam is more important than the Artham. Bhagavadam, Artham is important. For example, the way I will read Srimad Bhagavadam will be different from the way somebody else is reading Bhagavadam. Or someone else may read in a different way. It will vary from person to person. But in Vedam, no. It won't vary. Right? Even though we say, Srimad Bhagavadakyoyam Pratyaksha Krishnam Evahi. Krishna Pratyaksha Swarupam is Bhagavadam. We say like that. But still, you are not so particular about pronouncing the letters or the words in the Bhagavadam. Even though it is Krishna's form, you are not so particular about it like the way you are particular about reciting Vedam. Do you get the point? That you are more particular about while reciting Vedam, the letters and the words, than reciting while Bhagavadam itself. Even though Bhagavadam is Krishna himself. Is it not? Srimad Bhagavadakyoyam Pratyaksha Krishna Mevahi. Right? So, Bhagavadam, we say, if you have bhakti, you can read Bhagavadam. Even if you make mistakes, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If there is bhakti in the heart, you can read Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? So, that is why in the Bhagavatam, in the beginning itself, Yasmin Pratishlogam Avadhavatyavi. Remember? First canto. Namanyanandase Shongidaniyal Shrunandi Gayandi Granandi Sathava. that verse. Yes, that is that that thing, right? Now, what does that verse begins with? Yasmin pratishlokam abaddhavatyami tadva visargo janadhaga viplavo yasmin pratishlokam abaddhavatyami naman anandase shongi daniel shunandi gayandi granandi sathava. He says, now, because it is said like that in the Bhagavadam, one should not think, oh, I can do whatever I want, whichever way I like, I can say this thing. It's not a license. That verse is not a license to do whatever you like, right? Because then what will happen, it will become simply a show. People will abuse all these things. You have to be always careful about the people, how they can easily abuse things, right? So they will say, I got bhakti, so therefore I don't have to worry, even everything is wrong, it doesn't matter. That is not how you understand that verse, right? Because in Vedam, you have no license to do anything with it. You just have to accept it and follow it through the same way. In Bhagavadam, there is a verse like this. Now, people misunderstand that sometimes, thinking that, oh, I got the license now. Even if I'm making mistakes, it doesn't matter because I have got bhakti. But how do you know that you've got bhakti or not? Right? So, if you start thinking like that, that's wrong. Because then you have not understood it properly, because on the one hand we say Bhagavadam is Krishna. So every letter in the Bhagavadam is Krishna, Krishna's path. So suppose if I start mispronouncing that or making mistakes like that, Srimad Bhagavadam, you won't miss it, lose it that way, because Bhagavadam has its own potency of its own, right? It is always present in this world in the form of a book. It's present here, right? And there will always be some people who are reading Bhagavadam correctly. There will always be some people who read it correctly, with proper pronunciation, without mistakes, I mean, without mistake. There will all be some. And there will be many, many millions who will be reading it wrongly also, right? Vedam is not like that. Now, what I'm saying all these things is difference between Vedam and Bhagavadam, right? So, one person starts pronouncing wrongly anything in the Vedam, right? And if he starts teaching others in the same way, the whole thing is gone. You see? Whole thing is gone. Therefore, Vedam is not present in this world, not in the form of a book like Bhagavadam. Do you understand why I'm saying this? You see, I told you in the beginning, importance in the Vedam is for the sound. Importance in the Bhagavadam is for the meaning. So, Vedam exists in this world not in the form of book. Bhagavadam exists in this world in the form of book. So, suppose I make mistakes, you can always look into the book and find out what's the correct way of correct those who know about it. Vedam, what will you do? Vedam, you can't look into your book and see what's the correct pronunciation. So that is why Vedam differs from the Bhagavadam, and the way Vedam is taught differs from the Bhagavadam, right? So it is not dependent on a book. Which one? Vedam, right? Because you are teaching somebody through the mouth how to recite the Vedam. And if the teacher is correct, the student will get it right. And that is why nobody took to Vedam, and it was not allowed for everybody to study Vedam. Many, many people you will see, Brahmanas themselves, they were not allowed to study Vedam. Prabhupada was not allowed to study Vedam. They were not allowed to study Vedam. Nobody is allowed to study Vedam. It is exclusive for certain people whom they have grown up with that tradition. So that doesn't in any way bring Prabhupada's position different. What it means is that Prabhupada took to the form of bhakti, and bhakti is independent of all these things. You need not be even a follower of the Veda to be a bhakta. Bhakti is surrender, basically. Surrendering to Krishna is bhakti, nothing else. Bhakti is nothing but surrender. And to the degree of surrender, you are that bhakta, that devotee. And that's not dependent on the Vedam. But Vedam is too technical. When it comes to Vedam, you have to remember this, that it is not dependent on a book. It is completely technically the person who taught, he should have learned it from his teacher in the same way. And if the teacher has authorized him to study Vedam, only after that he is allowed to study. And once he has taken to that, then that's his life, rest of the life. And that number is coming down considerably in the modern world. That is why you will see Paramacharya and others wanted to sustain that Vedic knowledge in this world. And that can only be done when you have people who will take it, not with money or printing books. You can't sustain Vedam. This is the reason they say, you give us people, students, to study Vedam. And not through books or cash or anything won't help you. Or temples, nothing will help. Unless you have students to study Vedam. And whatever Veda Shakha we have lost today, is only not because of Muslims conquering or Christians conquering, it's only lost due to the one thing only, lack of students. That's how we lost it. Out of all the Veda Shakha, some of them have lost, some of them have gone. And the way we lost it was only because there were no students to study it. And what has been surviving here in this world, in the form of Vedam today, Rig Vedam, Yajur Vedam, Sama Vedam, whatever shakhas are available, it's only because it was kept live in somewhere in the country, in some parts of the country, some part of the Vedam. That's how it thrived. It survived. These things are good to know this, because we are, okay, if you think that you are just a devotee, you don't bother about anything else, then it's fine, it's nothing wrong. But then you have to be a devotee, proper devotee, isn't it? I can't be otherwise. There is no meaningless, this whole thing. Right? So, here he is saying here that the way it was taught was such that the teacher, everything depends on the teacher. If he is right, and if he is very strong in what he is teaching, he is very qualified and he is very devoted to his teaching, then his disciple also, whom he is teaching, will come out properly. So the authority is that how to pronounce correctly. That's the foremost important thing, and for which shiksha is required. We'll continue after a few minutes. Chedo darpanamarjanam vamahadava mirvavanam shreya kaidava chandriya vidaranam vidyavadhu jivanam anandam budivardhanam pratipada purnam radaswadanam sarvatma sumanam varam vijayade shri krishna sankirtanam namna magari bahuda nija sarva shakti tatrarpida nimida smaranena kala ഏദൃശീ തവ കൃപാ ഭഗവൻ മമാവി ദുർദൈവമീദൃശമിഹാജനിനാനുരാഗാഹം തൃണാരഭീഷു നീചേന തരോരഭീ സഹിഷ്ണുന അനാനിനാമനദേന കീർത്തനീയ സദാ ഹരി നധനം ന ജനം ന സുന്ദരീം കവിതാം വാ ജഗദീശ കാമയേ മമ ജന്മനി ജന്മനീശ്വരീ ഭവദാദ് ഭക്തിരഹൈ ദുഃഖി ത്വയി ഐ നന്ദനനുജകിങ്കരം പതിതാമം ക്ഷമേ ഭവാം ബുധോ കൃപയാതോപാദപങ്കജസ്ഥിതൂളി സദൃശം വിചിന്തയാം നയനം ഗളദശ്രുധാരയ വദനം ഗദ്ഗതിരുദ്ധയാ ഗിര പുളകേർജിതം കഥാവബൂതവന്നാമഗ്രഹണേ ഭവിഷ്യതി യുഗായുധം നിമേഷേണ ചക്ഷുഷാ പ്രാവിശായുധം ശൂന്യായുധം ജഗൽ സർവം ഗോവിന്ദ വിരഹേണ മേ ആശ്ലിഷ്യ വാ പാദരതാം വിനഷ്ടു മാം അദർശനാം മർമഹതാം കരോതു വാ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. So, Shiksha. Shiksha. We were discussing Shiksha. So, Shiksha from the Guru to the disciple, mainly it is about this pronunciation, Ucharanam. They spoke, right? And there, he has to have a control on his tongue, the mouth, and how it is spoken. So therefore, it requires a lot of adjustment with the body. And this, what was said, Udatam Anudatam Swaram Matra Velam Sandhanam. There are various aspects of the pronunciation. All of that, bringing them into a very acceptable stage of the child who is studying this, that is how it is, the training in Shiksha is. To pronounce these letters correctly, till you get it right, whatever adjustment necessary in the mouth or the tongue, using the tongue or the mouth, all this requires a lot of training. And you need to have someone who knows about it. So that takes its own time. So, when you read a Srimad Bhagavatam, we will say all these things are not that important. Srimad Bhagavatam verses, right? What we say is you keep hearing someone who is reading correctly and you will pick up how to do that. And also he'll say you keep reading it a lot, then gradually you will get it right. If you read it properly, you will get to know. By hearing others, you get to know how to read it properly, those who are reading correctly. And then you also practice yourself by reading it, and you will also get it right. That's all in Bhagavatam is concerned, right? And that's not considered to be wrong, because you find people who used to read Bhagavatam wrongly in the beginning, but after hearing from people who read it correctly, they also changed gradually and they got it right, right? So, it can happen like that, right? But in Vedam, that's not happening. It won't happen in Vedam. Because in Vedam, it is so controlled that till you study Vedangam, particularly Shiksha, and then learn the pronunciation properly, trained by someone who already has learned it properly and who is doing it properly, you will not be able to get it right. This is the main difference with the Bhagavatam and Vedam. Bhagavatam and Vedam, this difference exists, right? If in the beginning itself of the Vedam, studying Vedam, if you have made mistakes, that will remain like that for the rest of the life. You understand why? Because the letter pronunciation in the Vedam requires correction from the very beginning. Whereas letters in the Bhagavatam, because there's the modern Sanskrit in that, it does not have that problem. If you hear somebody who is reciting Bhagavatam correctly, if you keep taking all that seriously and if you practice it that way, gradually you will get it right by hearing alone. So therefore, Vedam is concerned no concessions on this. No concessions on this, right? Therefore, Shiksha Grantham, which is connected with the what I mentioned, Yajnavalkya Maharshi and Narada Maharshi and Vasishtha and all that, and they are all directly linked with Vedam. All of them are directly linked to Vedam. So, Shaunaga Shiksha also, Shaunaga Rishis, right? And they are connected to Vedam very closely, in other words, right? In the older days, they studied Vedam with this system intact. That means Vedangam and Vedam together, Shiksha and Vedam together, right? later on, when they took Puranam, for example, Bhagavatam, or Shivapuranam, or Vishnu Puranam, or any other Puranam, they were not taking to Puranam because they didn't have anything else, right? Today it is not like that. There are many Bhagavatam speakers, well-known speakers, who have not studied Vedam. In the olden days, they took Puranam after they had mastered Vedam. Yeah? And in the modern world, lot of people who are speaking Bhagavatam are not conversant with the Vedam. They have not studied Vedam. Right? So, only few you will find here and there who have studied Vedam and then come to Bhagavatam. Right? From the point of view of the speakers, they take to that literature which is more acceptable to the society at the particular time. In today's world, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, they are more prominent because of that. Even though they have studied Vedam, they took to Bhagavatam to suit the present world, because they know very well that Vedam itself, it's a most of the people won't understand if you recite from the Vedam. And also, it will be very hard to make people understand the importance of the Vedam. So therefore, they took to Bhagavatam and started propagating Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and Vishnu Puranam and things like that, Shiva Puranam for that matter, in the modern world, based on the present mindset of the people. Right? So, and those who have come from the Vedam and then who have taken to Puranam, they know where to break the words in Bhagavatam and where to stop it, and between letters how much time should be given, right? And you don't have to teach them these things. Understand? Those who have studied Vedam and then who have taken Bhagavatam, there are few people like that, not many. Majority of the people in India also today are who have come to Bhagavatam directly. They never had the opportunity to study Vedam in their life. Majority is like that. Only very few people who have the Vedam background, who come from the Vedam to Bhagavatam. Mostly others are direct into Bhagavatam. And therefore, when they recite Vedam, when they recite Bhagavatam, you will be able to detect where they come from the background of the Vedam or directly come to Bhagavatam. You will be able to find out. I can only tell you about Kerala because that's where my experience is. Personalities like Maliyor, they came from the Vedam background. So when they read Bhagavatam, that is different than the way others read. There's a lot of youngsters now and young people and who haven't studied Vedam. So therefore, when they read, there's a difference between the two. Right? So, so, similarly, certain words in the Bhagavatam, they knew how to follow the rules of Shiksha into pronouncing that word. That means udatam, anudatam, swaridam. In this way, the rules connected with the Shiksha, they were able to apply to those words in the... The problem is, in Bhagavatam, there's a lot of Vedam also. The words from the Vedam are present in the Bhagavatam. And they should be pronounced according to the Vedam, not based on the Bhagavatam, our knowledge, right? So they also know that where to use, apply the rules of Shiksha into Bhagavatam, when they apply those words which come from the Vedam. Right? And normally in our conversation also, these things are there, udatam, anudatam, swaridam and all, but we don't bother about all that. We don't have the knowledge, nor do we talk according to our emotion inside, isn't it? If you feel very strongly about something, you speak louder and you put stress on that. Whereas if you are talking something very casually, you will say in a different way. So this one is, you can see that, take for example the first verse in the Bhagavatam, Janmadhyasya, that verse, yeah? Janmadhyasya yadonvayadidharadas charte shabitneshwabhi. Now, have you heard this verse from different people? They all have given different tune to it, to that verse. Did you know that? There is a Chaupati tradition in the Ishkon. There is one tradition like that. Then there is some other traditions also, American tradition, in that. This verse, the first verse, right? And they give a different tune and all that, towards that. And none of them are correct, based on the Vedam. Because this Udatam, Anudatam, Saridam, all that, you are not applying there, because it's a verse from the Vedam, that first verse itself. What they have done is, what Vedavyasa has done is, different parts of the words in the Vedam, he has put them together in one verse. That is that first verse. Which one? Janmadhyasedaha. Janmadhyasedaha is Vedanta Sutram from Upanishad comes. Satyambaram Dhimahi is also from the Upanishads. And rest of it is also broken. And it is given commentary like that. How different parts of that verse comes from different parts of the Vedam. So when you are bringing them together into your verse like that, you have to remember that you have to follow the rules of Shiksha there. And nobody follows because nobody has studied Shiksha. So everybody is reciting it according to the best tune, what they thought is the best for that. So this is how things change in everything, right? So so he's saying here that you start thinking that, oh, then the devotees are arguing. That's not the right meter, they say. Similarly, all these verses in the Brahma Samhita also. Right? To be honest, the way what we are all, in all the temples they are reciting that Govinda Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. There itself there are mistakes in that. It is mistake in that. But because, who was that? Yamuna. She left, she is no more. She was a musician, and she, according to her capacity, she gave music to that. And that became the tradition of Ishkan temples everywhere. But from the Vedam point of view, if you look at that verses, particularly the last line, there are certain connections required there, how it is spoken. So what I'm saying is that we all have this nature in us to pronounce it according to our understanding, isn't it? Whether it is Yamuna saying that, or whether it is Chaupati tradition, or whatever it is, they will all say according to their, and then becomes that becomes the standard of the particular group, right? So, if you start bringing a new raga into it, the problem is already there is a raga for that, which you don't know. So you are bringing your raga into it, right? Because once you have known the swaram, then you will know what the raga means. But you have to know the swaram first, right? So, if you have understood the shiksha side of the verse properly, and then if you recite that verse, it will come out correctly. The proper ragam will come from that. That's the way it should work normally. Right? So sometimes what happens is people think ragam is important, right? So in that process what they do, they destroy the padam, the words. Padam has a sarupam. See, if you take one word in the Bhagavatam also, each letter is important and each word is important, right? So you should not destroy, for the sake of ragam, the padam. Then it is different. Then it is gone. Right? That is the reason that sometimes people say don't read Bhagavatam. You know, this is not a problem now. This has been happening for a long time. So what they have done in the past, all Srimad Bhagavatam, which is originally in Sanskrit, they have written Bhagavatam in local languages, in different languages. There is Bhagavatam available locally in their own language. Same Bhagavatam written in the local languages, in Malayalam, in Tamil and all that. There is, I don't know who wrote in other languages, but we all have that, so that you don't read the original Bhagavatam and murder it, the whole thing, kill the whole thing. So, for ordinary people who don't have the opportunity to have Shiksha or Vyakaranam or all the Veda training Vedam, what they did was, they wrote everything in Malayalam language, for example, they wrote Bhagavatam. So, ordinary people, women at home and others also, they read that Bhagavatam rather than wrongly reading the original Bhagavatam in that way. So now in this present situation also, Chandas is important, right? You will see Krishna mentions that in the Ekadasha Skandam, right? So Chandas also should not be broken. Chandas also you should not disturb that. The chandas of the words, right? So, but people think ragam is more important. Chandas is not important. So what they did was, according to the ragam, they started breaking the chandas. Once you break the chandas of the verse is gone, broken. They are all limbs of the body, isn't it? Veda Purusha's limbs, they are. Chandasa, Shiksha, Kalpam, Vyakaranam, Niruktam, Jyotisham and all. If you start murdering, that means you are cutting off different limbs of the body by your raga, which you have brought it in, right? So, so Chandasa has its own format, which Krishna says in the Bhagavatam. 32 letters, 64 letters, like that. Then add on 8 letters each. That's why the big verses, which has got much more letters, is adding on like this. The basic minimum is 32. From that it begins. Right? So, through this chandas, these words are joined together. Chandas is the one which keeps the words together in a particular format. Right? And so that the particular chandas and shiksha defines what the ragam will be, or what there's a name for that called vrittam, shardula vikreditam, and so many names you will find in the ancient Sanskrit texts, and they're all applicable to that. So without destroying that vrittam of the chandas, if you recite that in the proper ragam without breaking the words in the wrong way, right, only then you will be able to communicate the proper meaning of the words to the other person correctly, right? If you do like that, it is not a mistake. That means without disturbing the shiksha side of it, chandas also. That means you are not breaking up anywhere wrongly the words or the letters. Pronouncing the letters right and the words correctly, not breaking the word. For example, if you look at Sanskrit verses in the Bhagavatam, some of the verses are very long, isn't it? Especially in the fifth canto. You'll find where it is in the prose form. Long words you'll find. Now, if you start breaking it at places wrongly, the whole thing is gone. So, that's what it is saying here. That with fully knowing the chandas and shiksha, you should read those verses. And then And then whatever ragam comes from that properly, then it is okay. But if you start giving importance to the ragam and recite the words, you have murdered that. Whole thing has been murdered. Now, what can be done in the modern world? What do you do? We are distributing a lot of Bhagavatam, isn't it? All over the world. It's going to all sorts of people. Now, if you tell them all these things, they won't read it. So we say, don't read the verses. Just read the translation and the purport. Yeah? And then it will go in a different way. Somehow or the other, to get to know that there's a thing called the soul, and this is what we are, that's the whole idea behind it. Is it not? So, when situation becomes desperate, like today, this is all what you can do. You tell them that don't worry about the verses, or word by word meaning. And you, even there also there can mistakes can happen, right? So, the problem is this, that we really don't fully understand the complexity of these verses, how they have come into existence, how they were written, right? So, everything related to shiksha, udatam, anudatam, swaram, matram, all of that is, it's not only present in the Vedam, it's also present in the other literature, like Puranam, Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharatam, Ramayanam. Because many of the words in these books come from the Vedam. So these rules of Shiksha, Vyakaranam, Niruktam, Jyotisham, all these things applies to them as well. You really, to make it perfect, you got to know them. That is why those who studied Vedam and then those who have come to Bhagavatam through that, they won't have a problem. Remember, I was saying this many times before, that those who have come to Srimad Bhagavatam through Vedam, they will have a different way of studying Bhagavatam and also reading Bhagavatam. You know, so, then, why is it so special about Vedam then, if it is like that, right? Vedam, you can't change it under any circumstances. You can't change it. In Bhagavatam, a certain amount of leverage is there. Even if you mistakenly you have read it, you are still accepted there. Why? Because in Bhagavatam what they say, if you have bhakti, that's most important. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that. You remember? Mm-hmm. Bhaktiya Bhagavatam yayam. Na vilpatya na tigaya, he says. Not through commentary you will understand Bhagavatam. Not by any kind of interpretation you will understand Bhagavatam. You will understand Bhagavatam through bhakti. Bhakti is the only way to understand Bhagavatam. Bhaktiya Bhagavatam yayam. Na vilpatya na tigaya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said this. And that is holds good all the time. Because you can see that even all the great personalities who have come in these traditions, they were all not learned in the Vedam. So basically the whole tradition is centered around the bhakti. Bhakti tradition this is. This is bhakti tradition, right? So, and this thing that what is applicable to Vedam, that means this specificity that is specific about certain things about Vedam is not there for Bhagavatam or any other Puranam. About pronunciation, about the letters, about the words, about their structure, about the number of letters in a verse, Chandasa, Niruktam. All these rules, what is applicable to Vedam, doesn't exist for Bhagavatam or other Puranam. So huge difference between Vedam and when you come to Bhagavatam, right? So, yeah. So these rules don't apply to Puranam like the way it is applied to Vedam. At the same time, in the Vedam if something is spoken, udatam on a higher pitch, right? It should be spoken only in a higher pitch in the Vedam. If you bring it in a lower pitch, if you do like that, if you do in the Bhagavatam, it's okay, but not in the Vedam. Right? So, Panini also wrote a book about Shiksha, like Vyakaranam. And the Panini Shiksha, he mentions this, these things. right? So Veda Mantram, their importance, it's not only meaning of the verse, but it is also the way you recite it is important. And through that sound itself, you carry more importance than the meaning. Or remember this always. Vedam give more importance to the sound side of it. It's not that meaning is not important. Meaning is important. But the sound is given more importance. In Bhagavatam, meaning is important. Not the sound is not so important. Right? So, now, if Vedam is recited correctly, there's a lot of stories about this, about Vedam. And I remember that traditionally it is reciting Vedam is the worship of the deity. Even though ritualistic activities are going on in the deity room, Brahmanas recited Vedam to please the deity. They didn't recite Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam or other Puranam. Of course, due course of time, things have changed. The priority is always reciting Vedam for the deity. And that's what pleases him more than anything else. But you have to recite it correctly. That means you need qualified people to recite that. When that qualified people came down, that is when Bhagavatam and Ramayanam and Mahabharatam took over. Remember that. When deity worship started traditionally, originally, always it was Vedam that was recited in the temple to please the deity. Gradually what happened? Vedic scholars who could recite correctly came down. And then Puranams and Ramayanam, Mahabharatam took over. And they became the norm in the temple. Historically, no. Historically, Ramayana, Mahabharata were all read at home. Even Bhagavatam. In the temple, only Vedam was recited. Special area for that in the temple were built. And specially appointed, qualified people were there for doing that. Today you can't do it because there is nobody there to do it. Qualified people to do it. Even though, even today, to some extent, some big temples are doing it for a small period of time in a year. Recitation of the Vedam. Because to get the right people itself is so difficult. That's how bad it is. Situation. But then that position has never since taken over by Ramayanam, Mahabharatam, Bhagavatam and all that. And that became prominent, and now that is the situation now, everywhere. People are reading Bhagavatam at the temple, and Mahabharatam, and Ramayanam, Shivapuranam, Vishnupuranam, all the other Puranams came over like that. So now, why Vedam? Reciting Vedam for the deities, right? If the Vedam is recited correctly, and if there was a sankalpam inside of the person who has recited or those who have arranged, that sankalpam will come true. That's how it was at the time when Vedam was so prominent. And in there are certain places where the deities have spoken, particular about hearing Vedam. This is all historically behind it, that Vedam, certain temple, long ago, not now, long ago, when Vedam was recited in the temple, the deity's offerings, the all other worship is only complete when Vedam is recited. And if Vedam was not recited, the deity will speak to the pujari or to the management. In some way, they will give the message that the deity wants to hear the Vedam. And there are so many stories associated with that. That was the situation once. That is gone now because there is nobody there. Even temples are struggling to survive. So what to talk about reciting the Vedam? The world has changed so much, isn't it? And in this situation, now, because the results were, for example, when there was famine, there were Vedam was recited in the temple. Food was come in plenty, abundance it was produced. When there was no rain, they recited the Vedam in the temple and plenty of rain came. All these were known to the people then, in the past. They knew all this. That similarly, any kind of catastrophe comes in the society in the form of diseases and things like that, they had the answer for that in the Vedam. Similarly, the rulers of the king, when they were experiencing attack from the enemies, for protection they had Veda Mandram recited in the temples for that. So you can see the life of the king who ruled the country, the temple, Vedam, they are all very close to each other in their duty in everything. Vedam is a part of the temple. Temple is a part of the administration, whoever. Where is that today? Completely gone, isn't it? No connection at all with the administration as well as with the temples. And temple and the Vedam also connection is gone. So you can see the effect of Kali Yuga, how that has changed everything. And people are searching for some spiritual life, somewhere to find some relief from this hell where we have ended up. And they end up in all sorts of situations. And you can understand where it's all coming from. So, if you recite the Vedam correctly, and if it is capable of bringing all these results, what you are reciting for, I mean in your difficult situations, if you recite wrongly, the results will come accordingly. There is results for that as well. If you recite it correctly, Vedam, with the proper shiksha, understanding of the Vedangam, everything, the result will come. That is how guaranteed it was. That's why they had the faith in that. Now, if you don't do it, if you sing everything wrongly, without taking into account any of these things, the results will also be dangerous. There is problems will come from that. And they knew that as well. This is the reason why they didn't want to tamper with Vedam. This reason only. Because they knew, learning Vedam, teaching Vedam in the wrong way is more dangerous than doing it in the right way. Rather better don't do it. That's why Vedam remained very exclusive to a few people in the society. Everybody didn't have access to it. Normally only Brahmanas learned the Vedam. And among them also, only certain people who had that flair and who also had that samskaram inside and who are also pretty elevated in many ways, very devoted in their life. And they will look at the families from where they came from, and they were given, certain families were given the authority to study Vedam. Not everybody. Everybody was not given. So, among Brahmanas, if this classification was there, what to talk about Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra? Isn't it? If among the Brahmanas itself, if this division existed, those who can study and who cannot, they imposed this among them, want to talk about Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra to study the Vedam. There was no question at all of doing that, right? So the reason, as I said, that if you pronounce it wrongly, if you break the word wrongly anywhere, the meaning can change and it can cause problems. Just to give this understanding to us, that in the sixth canto of Bhagavadam, the Toshtava and Vishwarupa story is spoken. You see, when they prayed, if you know the story of that, Toshtava and Vishwarupa, that Toshtava was saying that his son, that he wanted that to have a son who can kill Indra. That was the purpose when he recited that, right? It's a very famous story that is, right? And Indra Shatro Vivardhaswa, that is that verse in the Bhagavadam, right? In there, the rules of the shiksha were not applied properly. That is why that word got broken. Vivardhaswa word got broken. Because of that, the meaning has changed, that a son born from me who will be killed by Indra, it became like that. because the shiksha was not followed properly. If you look at that verse in the Bhagavatam, you'll find Indrashatro Vivardhaswa, that verse. Right? The purpose, the sankalpam before reciting that verse, because this story is coming from the Vedam. It's not in the Bhagavatam, it is origin. Original verse is, story is in the Vedam. So there, Toshtava, who is a scholar, now why did this happen? That was Krishna's decision, that he has to make that mistake. Only then the meaning changed, and the result was the son who was born, who was killed, Vritrasura was killed by, the while performing the sacrifice, the idea was to have a son who will kill Indra. And the person who was born was Vritrasura. What happened at the end? Vritrasura got killed by Indra. It should have been the other way. Indra should have been killed by Vritrasura. But because there was a mistake in the way it was chanted, the mantra was chanted, it happened this way, the other way, opposite way. So these are interesting things in the Vedam to notice, right? So the meaning changed. Instead of killing Indra, one who has been killed by Indra, the meaning got changed like that. So this is due to the not following the shiksha rules properly. Toshtav didn't follow that. So that's one thing. Then Vritrasura was born. So so the word has become a thunderbolt. You will see in the Bhagavatam how it's spoken that Indra got this weapon called a thunderbolt. He got inside Vritrasura and from inside he came out, cutting his stomach, he came out. That's how it's mentioned there, isn't it? So that is, when it comes to Puranam, it is spoken like that. In Puranam, it is spoken. What it is that because the word was wrongly pronounced by Toshtava, right? His own words has become the thunderbolt. The word has become, it's not you take it like this, that it is a thunderbolt, a special kind of weapon, or a knife, like you would use for a stabbing in London. Use the knives, isn't it? So another knife like that. That's not what it means. But in Puranam, when you say, it has been made this story like this, that Indra went inside and with that weapon he cut through the stomach and came out. That's how, and Vritrasura died. But what that means from the Vedam doesn't say like that. Vedam will say like this, that the mandram was spoken wrongly and the words have turned into Vajrayudham, thunderbolt. Do you see the difference between the Vedam and Puranam? How things can change. Puranam is spoken in a particular way, Vedam spoken in a different way. When you see the differences, you will start understanding why you can't accept everything as it is spoken in the Puranam. Whereas our people are doing research in Puranam without knowing anything, the connection with the Vedam. So we end up in trouble. All sorts of controversies will come otherwise. So, so through this story of this Vritrasura in the Bhagavatam, what it is teaching us is the importance of shiksha. Shiksha Shastram. Out of the six Vedangam, shiksha is the first one. Though shiksha Shastram's importance is spoken through that incident in the Bhagavatam. If you have studied shiksha properly, through shiksha if you look at it, the way Toshtava was spoken that mantra was wrong. And that is why Vritrasura was born and how he killed Indra because of that. So, now, those who studied Vedam and he studied Bhagavatam, he won't be very upset about this story now. Now, if I, who haven't studied Vedam, I hear this story like this, that I'll be imagining the size of Vritrasura so huge. And there it says, in the Bhagavatam it says, Vritrasura opened the mouth, and Indra with his Airavatam elephant, everything went inside. The whole thing. Through. So I was imagining how big he should be. to go inside. And then he goes into his stomach and he cut it open from inside with this Vajrayudham, and he comes out, and then Vritrasura dies. So I'll be imagining all these things in my mind, how big it is like that. But those who have studied Vedam, he won't be imagining all these things, what we are imagining. Do you see the difference? Those who studied Vedam. But we have to say it like this so that people will listen. Otherwise they won't listen. Even after saying all the stories, they don't come. They don't listen. So if you don't say the stories, what will happen? This is how people are. That's the way it is. That's why people, when they, those who have studied Vedam, and when they talk about all these things, they will add to it something else to make it more interesting. About this fighting, and all the listeners will be sitting there with their open mouth. Wow, how big is this Vritrasura? And things like that, right? So, now, normal Sanskrit language, that these restrictions are not there. What is applicable to Vedam? About Ucharanam, about sound vibrations, right? So, and even if you travel all over the country, in Bharatavarsham itself, you will find normal Sanskrit is spoken differently. It will have its own effect of your own language. For example, people who speak Punjabi, people, they will speak with the Punjabi influence, and Gujarati same thing, Tamil will have same thing, Malayalam also will have same thing. So that influence will be there in the normal Sanskrit. But when it comes to Vedam, no. This is the difference, right? So, so there, you can see if you travel in different states also in India, right? And those who have not studied Vedam, their pronunciation is poor, right? And whereas those who have studied Vedam, their pronunciation is more perfect. These things, right? And not only that, those who have not studied Vedam, right? The problem they have is that their own mother tongue will influence their pronunciation. Isn't it? Their own mother tongue, right? For example, you can see in certain letters, like letter wa doesn't exist in Bengali. Isn't it? Everything is ba for them. Bande Guru Shri Charanarabindam. And they say Brajabhumi. And say Vrindavan, like that. Whereas in the north, they say Vrindavanam, or Vrindavanam, and Vrajabhumi, like that. That is due to this, and va and ba is like that. Similarly, sa and sha. Sa is not there in Bengali. They always say sha. Shamsara dhavan analidhaloga. They will sing like that. Samsara dhavan analidhaloga. They will sing Shamsara Dhavan Analidhaloga. So those effect, even though they are Sanskrit verses, when it is recited by a Bengali and when it is recited by somebody else, it will be different. But that won't happen to Vedam. If you listen to Prabhupada singing Samsara Dhavan Analidhaloga, how does he sing? Shamsara Dhava. Similarly, Bhaktichari also, if he sings, he'll say Shamsara Dhava. Shamsara Dhava, they will sing. But whereas elsewhere, they will always sing Samsara Dhava Nalini Dhava. So that is because in Bengali, that effect of Sha and Sa. Sa is not prominent, Sha is prominent for them. Right? And the same way, this Ucharanam of the letters varies from place to place, all over. Normal Sanskrit, I'm talking about normal Sanskrit, not the Vedam, Sanskrit in the Vedam, right? And these three letters particularly, Sha, Sha, and Sa, right? These three letters is spoken differently in different places. Sha, Sha, and Sa. If you carefully observe, you will see these things, changes, right? sometimes when they recite these verses in the Bhagavadam, you may start thinking, are they reading the same verses what I am reading in the Bhagavadam? Because there is so much difference because of this. Right. Because the influence of Hindi on Sanskrit, that also you have to look at. Because that's your mother tongue. So due to influence of Hindi also, when they read Sanskrit verses, you will find that effect on the Sanskrit verses. And that throughout the country you will find. Tamil has its effect on the Sanskrit when they recite. Malayalam has its effect. Karnataka has its effect. Andhra has its own effect. Like Bengali has its effect. So normal Sanskrit language, which is the verses in the Bhagavatam and Ramayanam and all that, they all get a little bit changed due to the mother tongue, of your mother tongue, right? Particularly these three letters, Sha, Sha and Sa, right? And a lot of it is in India, you feel, is due to the influence of Hindi, because Hindi is spoken so widely, mother tongue for so many people. Therefore, Hindi has a big effect on the Sanskrit pronunciations, right? So, and sometimes when you hear, when they speak, you won't know, are they speaking Hindi or are they speaking Sanskrit? You get that doubt because of the effect, I'm saying, the influence of the way it is spoken. So, if you travel all over India, go to Benares, go to Vrindavan, and see how they speak in Sanskrit, and then you will notice this. And then you listen to television, Doordarshan also, and All India Radio and all. Now Sanskrit news reading is there in radio. Every day there is news read in Sanskrit, morning and evening, like in all other languages. If you hear that, you will find the person who is speaking that Sanskrit, where he comes from. Yeah, it will have sometimes strong effect of Hindi or strong effect influence of Tamil or Gujarati or whatever that is, right? So, so letters itself, right? The varnam. We are talking about varna. Varna means from starting with ka, kaka ganghanga, then chacha janjanya, tata dandana, tata dandana, papa bambhama. They are called kachatatapa. Kachatatapa, it's called. Because it starts with ka, cha, ta, ta, and pa. Ka, cha, ta, ta, pa. Five of them. Ka, ka, ga, ghanga. Five times five, 25. Then those letters are okay, more or less okay, right? Then when it comes, problem comes, there are certain letters which becomes a bit more complicated, right? So ja, for example, ja, ka, and it is not that it is difficult to pronounce that, but the influence of your own language will have a effect on that. Similarly, this janmadhyasya yatonvayadidharatas, that verse if you take, certain people when they pronounce, if you carefully listen, that itaratha won't come very well. Janmadhyasya yadonvayad itaratas chartesh abhijnaswara. Itaratha won't come. I'll just flow through the whole thing. Right? So, that is due to the mother tongue influence. Right? And Vedam, they are very specific about these things. Very particular about it. But, Laugika Samskritam, that means the Sanskrit language which is normally used for poetry, novels and conversations, this is not so important. It's not given any, it's not mandatory. In other words, these rules are not mandatory. You have to pick it up, like even Hindi, if you see the way it is spoken in Maharashtra, spoken in Gujarat, or in Punjab, or in Delhi, they are all a little bit different, isn't it? The way you speak, flow is different, and the words are quite different when you speak the way it is spoken. Even though it communicates, but people do understand each other when you communicate. So, some Bhagavatam speakers who have studied Vedam very well, it's worthwhile listening to them, especially the last generation. New generation doesn't have that. They have just taken to Bhagavatam directly and say, you know. So, in the Vedam, there is mantram, brahmanam, aranyakam, upanishad. The four sections, we talked about that before. Mantram is the samhita itself, right? Now, when you break a word, if wrong places, if you are broken, certain things you have to say in one word. You should not break halfway anywhere. Some words are very long, especially in the fifth canto you will find. Some words are very long. If you break somewhere in between, thinking that you are not clear about where to break, right? By mistake you are broken halfway, then it is you have broken the rule of the Samhita there. That means that in one breath you have to complete that word. In one breath. Right? So that only then it becomes a Samhita. You know where this word Samhita comes? If you look into Bhagavatam, you will say that Srimad Bhagavatam Purana Mamalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam Yasmin, it is called Paramahamsa Samhita. It is called Yasmin Paramahamsa Mega Mamalam Yanam Varam Giyate. So, generally Bhagavatam is referred to as Paramahamsa Samhita. Bhagavatam is Paramahamsa Samhita, it is. Right? It will only become a Samhita if you don't break your breath. Suppose for breathing purposes, certain words, if you have cannot pronounce it in one breath, you have broken it. Then it is you have broken the rules of the Samhita. Right? So, similarly, sandhis, there are junctions. There you cannot break them. And there you have to control your breath. So, what I am saying is, when Shiksha is taught to the children, all these things are in the mind of the teacher, the guru. That is why they spend their 15-20 years with the Gurukulam, with the teacher. He has to get the breathing right. Because if you learned it in the wrong way, then the whole life you will be doing it in the wrong way. So you have to get the breathing right, the pronunciation right, and there again all the things related to Shiksha. Each letter, how it is pronounced properly, the udatam, anudatam, swaram, all those things. In this way, if you continue with the education, you can imagine how much time you have to devote for this, right? So, for example, tene brahma hridaya adikavaye mukhyandiyal suraya, that line, if you take. Janmadhyasya edonvayadidharadas chartya shabitnya swaral. Tene brahma hridaya adikavaye mukhyandiyal suraya. Now, normally, tene brahma hridaya, after that you are not allowed to stop. You have to say it in one lot. Because they say, it is a vrittam called Shardula Vikreditam. The Samhita says, like that, right? And therefore, it is spoken in one lot. Tene brahma hridaya adikavaye mukhyandiyal sudaya. In one way it has to be spoken. But normally nobody follows all these things anymore. We are just happy if the verse is on the board, and if we have broken the words and word by word meaning and transliteration, or what do they call that? And we read through the translation and purport. That's all what we have got with us, right? Now, Mahabharatam, it's called Panjamo Vedam Uchyate. It's the fifth Vedam it is called, right? The reason for that is, why it's called the fifth Vedam is, lot of the words in the Mahabharatam is from the Vedam, right? And it gives you an impression like a Vedam, even though it's not Vedam. The Vedam, it gives an impression as though it is a Vedam. Because of the use of the Vedic words. The words are used so freely in the Mahabharatam, it gives an impression of the Vedam, but actually Mahabharatam is compiled in the Laukika Samskritam. That means vocal Samskritam, communicating, the normal communication language, Laukiyam. In the Laukika Samskritam, Mahabharatam is compiled. But there is a lot of words in that from the Vedam, Vaidya Samskritam, right? Therefore, it is called that Mahabharatam is called the fifth Vedam because of this, right? And then we will see here, Shiksha. We are talking about Shiksha, all these things, right? So, Shiksha, what else it says? Every letter, where you should touch the letter when you pronounce a particular letter, right? And that means sparsham. Sparsham means that a letter, say you are pronouncing a letter ka. In that letter ka, where to get that stress in the ka when you pronounce the letter ka, right? So Shiksha will tell you how to do it correctly. Suppose I say the letter ka, you will all say in a different way, all of us. Will say in a way we are used to, isn't it? But if you have studied Shiksha, you will say it correctly. The word letter ka, right? So, rishis were concerned about these things. In today's world, who is bothered about all those things, isn't it? But rishis were so concerned about this letter. Why is that? Because in order for the language to stay pure, the letter should stay pure. The letter should stay pure. You can see how language changes, isn't it? If you look, lot of Sanskrit words has come to English now. Mantra, for example. Everybody says mantra now. Guru, another word. Yeah? And you can see, because they have not understood the letter properly, the meaning of the word guru has changed in English. Suppose you are very expert in something, they'll say he's the guru of that. Do they not say like that? Yeah. So whereas what is the letter guru means? Gu means darkness. Ra means one who removes your ignorance. Both are explained in detail in the Shiksha for word guru. And only in that context guru makes sense. Whereas if you are expert in some material knowledge and you start calling him a guru, how can it be a guru? It's not. So that means the language is polluted already. Isn't it? The English language has taken a word from another language and used it in the wrong way. That means your language is polluted. English has lost its purity because of that. Because, okay, you are communicating something, that's fine. But you have lost the purity of the language. Rishis are very particular about this. They won't allow this to happen. So that is why they have put all these rules into it. Right? Only then the language will stay pure all the time, to remain pure. Right? So, you take English for example, if you take English, while you're reading it, it's one thing. Right? And when you start, common we say like this, but, but, and put, put. So, the words are same, but, but, put, it has changed. Yeah? So even though the letters are the same, the meaning is changing, right? And that's the reason the people are learned in the Sanskrit, they will call this language doesn't have proper rules. So therefore it is called Mlecha Bhasha. For this reason only, right? Now, Mlecha Bhasha is not because it is spoken by some people. Because your language is not pure, that is why it's called Mlecha Bhasha. Not that it is spoken by English people or anybody, or in, for that matter. All other languages for them is Mlecha. Mlecha means Mlich. This is the Dhadu. That is Avyaktam. It's not clear where it's coming from, those words, right? So that is because the language is not perfect. Whatever you are speaking, it is not pure in its, it is not able to, it doesn't have the purity of the word it should have. And the way you pronounce it is not precise, right? C-U-T, cut. B-U-T, but. P-U-T, put. It should be put. If C-U-T is cut and B-U-T is but, P-U-T should be put, not put. Like this, there are so many more like that. It's not trying to criticize the language. I'm saying this problem is in all languages, in Indian languages also. My own language also has got the same problem. So this is called purity of the language. What you speak and what is written should tally each other. And you should not have no license to change it. If you change it, then that means anybody can do anything then. And that's not allowed. So, because the rishis knew these things, they will not agree to do any alteration on the language because they will apply the rules of the shiksha there. Shiksha is the one who is protecting this. All these things. Right? So, those who speak that language, you will understand this. And sometimes Sanskrit scholars, when they speak English, it will appear as though they are speaking Sanskrit. That's also there, right? That if they speak English, those who have learned in Sanskrit, when they speak English, it will appear as though they are speaking Sanskrit, right? Because the reason is they have studied shiksha. And whereas if you listen English from an English speaking person, you will find it different. And you are thinking that the person who is speaking English and who is speaking his own language, he is correct. According to Sanskrit, it's not. Because his language is polluted, he is speaking wrongly. It is the Sanskrit person, when he speaks English, he will speak it correctly more, based on the law of shiksha. Whereas Englishman doesn't have shiksha. So he speaks, and that will vary from London to Aberdeen. It will change 100 times differently. You won't understand what somebody in Scotland is saying, somebody is in Manchester is saying, even what somebody is saying in Birmingham, you won't understand. So why this problem? Because there is no shiksha. This is the difficulty. That's why rishis knew all these problems. And therefore what they did, they tied the language with all rules and regulations that no way you can make a mistake there. And unless you study all that, you can't say it properly also. In this way, they protected Veda through shiksha. Right? So, for us, if I see one letter, we have a rule to say it like this, in this way. And if I see that letter wherever in another place, in another form, there also the same rule will apply. Whereas that's not happening here, isn't it? Say, for example, this word individual. We were taught at school individual. Later on I started saying individual. They started saying, a lot of people say like that, individual. Then, which is correct? I don't know which is correct. One time it was taught individual, individuality. Then they say individuality. And same thing, there are many words in America when they speak in a different way than the way we speak here. Right? How the words will change. Right? So, but in Vedam, those things won't happen because of shiksha. That is why do you think all these rishis, are they crazy to spend so much time on all these things? Because they knew whatever they are leaving behind in this world, it should be beneficial to the society forever. And if you don't protect it like this, it will not remain like that. If you don't protect it that way. So therefore, they have... And all these signs existed before the rishis also, like Vedam. All what they have done, they have set it up in an order through their books. When they compiled it, like Vasishtha, Yavalkya. And that's why when we say something, whole Vedic tradition we owe to the rishis. It is they who protected it, they maintain it. Krishna has also taken from them. While speaking Bhagavad Gita or Shuka Brahmarshi, while speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, it's all their wealth it is. That's why we say, when we say Sanatana Dharma means, it is Rishi's Dharma. They are the protectors of this. They maintained it. And it is through them that it is surviving still in this world. So, I will stop there today with Shiksha. Tomorrow we'll start with Vyakarana. Tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.